Hey guys, Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast here. And look, I know you can hear me and I can't see you, but I bet if I could, I'd be like, damn, you're clear as fuck, dog, because I've got my simple contacts in. Look, there's a million things demanding your time these days, and contact lenses shouldn't be one of them. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in just minutes. No more fucking doctor's offices or weird people farting in waiting rooms and trying to call out who farted, and you always guess wrong, and then you embarrass yourself. All you do is take a vision test, self-guided, and it takes 5 minutes. You know what I'm saying? That saves so much time that you would be going to the doctor's office trying to guess who's farting. And the test is super fucking easy. It's designed by doctors and licensed ophthalmologists that review every test carefully and make sure your eyes look healthy and that your vision hasn't changed. They offer every brand of lenses and the prices are unbeatable. Plus, the vision test is just $20. Compare that with the annual appointment, which can be up to $200 without insurance. That's a great fucking deal. And shipping's free. And best of all, our listeners today, if you sign up, get $30 off your first Simple Contacts order. Do you wear contacts? You probably do, because people are losing their fucking vision. So sign up today going to simplecontacts.com/ALN and get $30 off your first Simple Contacts order. That's simplecontacts.com/ALN. I do want to mention this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. You still need to do those occasionally. But this is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts. Simple Contacts only tests that the current prescription still helps you see 20/20, and then they renew that prescription. You still need to get your periodic health eye exam. But Simple Contacts, look, they've been rated 5 stars over 3,000 times on the App Store. You can text with a support team and always get someone to speak with and not a robot, you know, which, let's be honest, they're taking over and starting to infiltrate the way we deal with everything. Look at Alexa. That fucking... she's crazy. With summer around the corner, there's no shortage of reasons to not have contacts on hand. Beach days, vacation days, outdoor activities, dwarf weddings. Use Simple Contacts to update your prescription and stock up for the summer. Go to simplecontacts.com/ALN and get $30 off your first order today. That's simplecontacts.com/ALN. What is it? simplecontacts.com/ALN. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Welcome back to another week of episodes. We got a bonus ep on Thursday coming up too, with my boy Joey McIntyre from New Kids on the Block, Return of the Mac, the McCarthys. Obviously, you know, probably your bedroom wall, guy or girl, you know, guys, fans span the gamut. Joe's getting ready to move to New York City with his family. After, I think, 15 or 16 years in Los Angeles. And sad to see him go, but, you know, I know I'm going to see him. I'm going to be out there real soon, so I will see him. This Thursday will be a bonus ep with me and Joe before he moves to New York, just one-on-one. And so fun. I mean, just, you know, there's certain people you can just talk for hours with and have a lot of laughs. And Joe is real candid with a lot of exciting things he's working on and just his time in L.A., reflecting on that. And moving to New York. So be on the lookout for that bonus episode, Joey McIntyre, Thursday. Today's episode, man, one of my favorite comics on the planet. Probably one of yours. Been wanting to have him on the show for a long time. It's Todd Glass, baby. Todd Glass. Todd motherfucking Glass. This dude's so funny. Hadn't really chatted with him too much outside of this conversation, which is always, you know, again, a thankful reminder that the podcast exists, because what a great way to get to know somebody and become chums. And Todd is just one of those naturally funny, quick, sweet, real sweet dude. And man, he brought it on this episode. He's now a friend and hilarious, and a guy that you always want to watch when he's on stage. If you're a comedian, you just you make time to watch the brilliance of Todd Glass. Follow Todd on Twitter at Todd Glass. And Instagram. The Todd Glass Show is his podcast, toddglass.com for all of his tour dates. My tour dates are adamraycomedy.com. Brad is bradwilliamscomedy.com. And this weekend, some shows added. I'm coming to Arizona, baby. Phoenix, Stand Up Live, July 8th, 9th, and 10th. I'm doing the late shows on the 8th and 9th, 10 o'clock on Friday, 9:30 on Saturday, and then 7 p.m. on Sunday. Stand Up Live, Phoenix, Arizona. Tickets at AdamRayComedy.com. Brad Williams is going to be in Tacoma at the Tacoma Comedy Club. So go see Brad Williams at the Tacoma Comedy Club. They still have not booked me since last time I've been there. I'll keep saying it until they do it. June 7th through June 9th, Brad Williams, Tacoma Comedy Club. Bunch of other tour dates on my website. San Jose is coming up. New York, Chicago. Utah, Vegas. So come see me. Come see me and bring your merch, which you can get at aboutlastnightpodcast.com. ALN merch, beanies, shirts, pants. So much fun stuff. Bring them to the shows. We'll sign them, take pictures with you, and then you can have some memories. Man, so many great eps coming up. As I've mentioned in the past few eps, Sandra Bullock, that episode is recording this week, which means that episode will be posted on Monday, June 11th. Make sure you subscribe and around a computer, June 11th, Monday, Sandra Bullock making her podcast and ALN podcast debut. She's not done one. This is very special. Going to have an hour conversation with the one and only Sandra Bullock. That'll be dropping Monday, June 11th. Make sure you subscribe. Tell your friends, tell your family, and get ready for that one. Twitter, ALN Podcast, and Instagram, at Funny Brad for Twitter, Adam Ray Comedy for Twitter. Fuck, a lot of exciting stuff in the works, so make sure you're subscribed, because the pod is going to some cool places coming up here in the next few months, and we can't do it without you guys, the fans. Speaking of which, going to read a fan email here, which I like to do every few eps, just to give you guys a shout out and then get you some merch. Today's fan mail, actually a fan tweet, comes to us from Ben Stoffel, who writes, "Man, after a long 6 months, I'm officially cancer-free. And they don't know this, but a big thank you to the About Last Night podcast, Adam Ray, Brad Williams, for giving me so much consistent laughter the past 6 months. Laughter was my coping mechanism, and I can't overstate how much it helped." Dude, that is crazy. And so glad you're cancer-free. That is unbelievable. And the fact that we could do anything to help make you smile during such a crazy chapter of your life, that's amazing. And you know, that is, it's so fun to do what we do, and obviously laughter is the best medicine, you know. And and I feel very fortunate to have gotten this deep into it, to where it's, you know, affecting more people than just my mom and her friends. So thanks for that message, dude. And fuck, so glad you're cancer free, dude. Time to shotgun a beer and jerk off. I don't know. Fuck, live your life, dude. I don't know. I love that those are the first two things I thought of. Being like, you beat cancer, go masturbate. Ben Stovall, thank you for the message, and thanks for listening. Hit us an email at aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com, and Brad will send you some merch. You're the best, dude. All right. I think that's it. Now they've got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Todd Glass.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. It's about last night.
I don't know where it came from, but you know when you go to a restaurant and you have a craft and they put the wine in it?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't fucking live, I don't have craft, there's never, but until it does it have purpose to your life, I had four of them. Somehow I thought, I go, you're not going, no, who's coming over? You have this right. Fake thing that
yeah.
You're not, you. If it's refrigerated wine, they go put it in the refrigerator, I tell people. We don't put it, so I got rid of those and just shit like that.
Yeah, and like, no one's going to, no one's going to look at your wine coming out of the fridge or from a wine rack and go, what, no craft?
Yeah. No, it doesn't. Who do I, it's like this fake thing.
No ice bowl.
Yeah, right. Same thing with that. Like, that's the type of shit you start buying. You're like, oh, that looks cool. I don't need it. I fucking love it.
What would, and you can hop on the mic. We're going.
Okay.
Yeah.
We are?
Yeah. What would somebody expect if they were to come over for a little, I don't know, a coffee or a dinner party at Todd Glass's house?
Oh, I don't like to cook. I don't like to cook, but I do like to have people over.
Yeah, you like to entertain.
I do like to entertain, and it's usually, I have it pretty dark. You know, I'm pretty dark, but I've talked about that a lot.
Yeah, in your special, which is airing right now on Netflix,
so it's phenomenal. Like
all of our listeners can go and have a look at that. You do talk about how everyone has their houses too light.
I think they do, and I think I can almost prove it scientifically. Like, when I tell people that, I'm going to quote what's in the special, but, like, just so you don't think I'm, like, going to my act. You know, like, Todd Glass went right to the act. He had song cues with him.
Has anybody done that, by the way, done their whole act on a podcast? Like, I mean, like very, you know,
that
subtly?
Would be such a... You almost should edit that out and then just do it. Just keep asking me questions.
That set you up for the bits.
That set me up for the bits. And they're basically, going, I think he's just doing. Yeah. Even if you do like a 5-year-old special, maybe.
Yeah.
That'd be funny. Yeah,
we could just Byron Allen you the whole time.
That's how Byron Allen would shoot our specials.
Yeah.
He goes, no, my style is we just make it look like we're having a conversation, but then it's real funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't like candles.
Yeah. You don't like. We figured out what would be the lazier setup for Byron Allen. Like, he's already like, I heard you like Ferris wheels.
Yeah.
So we figured the only way that would be less conversation would be like, now I heard you like to talk. You know, maybe that would just... And you like to say stuff.
I've heard you occasionally say things that are funny. Yeah. Go ahead.
Right, that's enough.
The floor is yours. What's the max amount of people that you can handle?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
Wow, what was that?
That was a little. That was the Todd Glass first question bell.
Yeah. Do people know you're? I mean, you're clean. Like, do you talk about it on your podcast?
Not really. I mean, this is about how it usually. I mean, I definitely when someone's coming over, tidy up a little bit more. Like, you know, the remotes aren't usually OCD lined up like that. And I don't even call that OCD. Actually, like, you know, but I mean,
you have one rogue remote just so we don't think you're insane.
There's yeah right. Just to throw it off.
Just because if I walk into a house and there's 5 remotes that are exactly lined up like biggest to smallest and they're all facing the exact same side, I go, oh, they're crazy.
Yeah, I think I'm not like I say. I don't know. My brother told me this.
Tell this up just a little bit to you.
Oh yeah, my brother's a teacher. I know we're going all over the place.
Yeah,
will
that's how we do it. We always get back though.
Okay, I will answer about the thing at the house. But my brother said, like, you know, like if there's a if where it's a disorder. Let's say when it turns into a disorder. Mm-hmm. I go, where do you think I rank? Just, he's a teacher. So he's pretty good at looking at kids and making some judgments. And he said, well, you're definitely at best crazy fucking clean.
Right.
Because I think you dabble. Because I watched you. He goes, I had to watch you from afar. Someone could meet you one day and not think so. But you dabble into some compulsion. Mm-hmm. He goes, but I saw you had a party here one night. And he goes, you know, I just subconsciously watch it. You let stuff go. You touch stuff. You're actually as clean as I am. I can amazingly, like, touch a lot of stuff and not, like, until I feel bad. I'll be at the gym for two. I'm not proud of this, and I'm more aware of it now. But it'll show you, like, I'll be at the gym working out for an hour and a half on the treadmill. I'll go get a package of sushi after I push the cart and eat it with my hands. So
they wipe the machines down.
They wipe them down.
And then you'll be furious at someone for not using a coaster.
I'm not a coaster guy. Not a coaster. Okay. Matter of fact, I have a table, big old barn table, to let people know that my cleanliness doesn't align with that type of, like, I grew up, my mom, not a coaster guy.
Oh,
you
really?
Know, not a coaster guy. No, nobody in my family was really a coaster person. Sounds so weird to say that.
This was in Philadelphia.
Yeah, in Philadelphia. Yeah. It's you, Adam. You do your homework. But
this is a lucky guess.
But I like, it's order for me. Like, when I go home, this will say, like, I go home to my mom's, and I like, I just like calm. So she knows
there's
I'm
an L in that word, just so we're all clear.
Yeah.
Just so
that's like the worst thing to misunderstand.
All right, as I repeat, that's Brad's setup for your cum joke. Your cum calm
joke.
The
funny thing is,
because you were talking about your mom, and then you just said, I just like calm, and I was like, there's a hard L. Make sure you hit that L.
Oh my.
Coincidentally, she loved it though.
Yeah.
That was. So she knows I'm coming home. My whole family knows. My mom was very clean. You know, she is, but she can have a little more chaos than me. Like, she has 5 dogs, and she thinks dusting to me. I don't dust. Like, I don't. Mm-hmm. That's not. I don't dust. I don't. Not like I'm. It's just not.
Say fuck you if you saw someone dusting. You just, it's not. Not
no, no, it's
you
not.
Do.
I don't. My mom grew up. She was so when I come home for like the holidays. She has, you know, she goes, I had the housekeeper. She dusted there. I'm like, I don't say this to her, but I go, fuck the dusting. Get the dog nose marks off the window. It's killing me. I can't talk. I wish I could. I go home and appreciate the insanity. Because I have a good family. Like, we oddly, with some drama here and there, we get along. We laugh a lot. That's my mom is awesome. So I'm able to look. But the chaos, I go, if it's someone else's chaos, I can go to my friend Andrea, her parents' house. It's chaotic. I love it.
Doesn't affect you, right? Yeah.
It does. But my mom, when the dogs, especially when they're like outside and they want to come in, there they start with their paw. It's only because my mom and dad let them do that.
Yeah.
You could train them very easy.
Sure.
But the mud on the paw, and it's and they're like, I can't even make the sound. And then it's there, dried mud. I'm like, Mom, I can't talk to you. I clean that window.
Yeah.
I can't. The barbecue cover flew off, and it's like, in the corner of the yard, over in the corner, and it's got, like, they chewed it a little, so the white stuff from inside.
God.
I'm like, Mom, fuck dusting. Go have
big
the housekeeper.
Big to small.
Yeah.
Let's work that way.
I just got worked up.
It's so true, though. Moms can handle an absurd amount of just fucking chaos. Like, they just, something that they're, like, predisposed to just be able to, like, compartmentalize, like, there's this over there, there's that over there, I'll get to that in a second, I'll do that later. I'm gonna do that instead of that. Fuck that, though, you know?
And everybody takes
that's a mom's should be a bumper sticker for moms everywhere. Fuck that, though. I'm gonna do that before that, but fuck that, though.
Oh, she has the long, and my mom is like, you know, give them credit. I'm always afraid, not afraid, God forbid my mom would hear this podcast. So far, she'd actually should be okay, because I said some nice things.
I mean, she comments on our Twitter very frequently.
Oh, wait a second. Are you kidding me? Why? The last thing you see is me choking, right? To me, that's, well, I guess I don't have to do visuals, but the old visual of, like, you know, when somebody's saying, never mind.
What?
But anyway, it's on point.
Yeah. Well,
but go ahead.
Well, and then you talked about in, because I just had a party at my place this past weekend, and then I watched your special, and you talked about how before a party, you will present your fridge. You will stage your fridge.
Yeah. Well, it's also if I have people coming in from out of town. Like, you don't know you do it until you get teased about it. Like, my friends will go, my close friends, they'll be like, are those Pellegrino waters for show, or can we drink them? And I go, no, drink them, but they're for show. I mean, once you get asked, you can't, because then that's, what am I, living in, is it Disneyland, or is it really in my house?
Yeah, drink them, but you better make an overly excited, gah, after you sip it.
And leave the bottle out. I try to have as many things out as I can that are visually nice.
Yeah.
So when bottles are, like, I don't want someone to clear bottles. Like, I like when bottles are left out on the table. It's the sign of the party, the life that went on that night.
Yeah. Your house should be a little messy after the party. Otherwise,
I call it TV night. Yeah. TV. I call, if it's like 15 people, I call it, I want it TV messy. Like, there's no dirty napkins with pizza sauce on it.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's bottles everywhere, there's glasses. Because I was at someone's house once, and I just remembered this. It was a long time ago, and everyone started clearing off the kitchen table, just like I do. Mm-hmm. We cleared it all off after dinner, in case people want to go sit there. You know, like, when dinner's over, you repurpose it.
Yeah.
She goes, leave bottles, very casual. She goes, leave bottles and glasses. And I was like, I asked her in the kitchen. I said, hey, I noticed you said leave bottles. She goes, well, it's the energy of the night. She goes, you don't want to wipe away the energy of the night.
Great way to put it. Yeah.
I know. So now I do that. People start, here's the weird thing. They start putting bottles over near the recycling that doesn't exist. But they think, oh, he must recycle, because Todd seems like the type of guy that would definitely recycle. So
I want to be like that. I want recycle vibes.
Right. And then I go put the bottles when no one's looking back on the table. Now that looks a little crazy. I'm like, no, leave the bottles. Like, no. Bottles are on the table.
We have to look like we had a party.
Right.
And again, you want that. You don't want it to look like Hangover the next morning, but you want it to look like Will Smith threw a party on Fresh Prince in the pool house.
Yes.
To where there was, like, you know, there's no cocaine in the bathroom, but there's some calm on the couch, you know? To where, like, people had a good time and they're going to talk about it the next day.
Exactly.
You can go on Instagram and see a couple moments from the previous night.
See? Nice TV nice, I call it. There's no cell phone. I don't, but the bathroom, I'm going to answer your question.
Yeah. Okay.
So the thing that I think I can almost prove scientifically, I do. I think a lot of people are off, and I'll tell you why. Like, it's not really about me. Yeah, at the end of the day, I want it right for me, but right for me is right for everybody. Yeah, I don't want, sure. I want my house to be where everyone overwhelmingly is comfortable. So if I was wrong every time, I'd go, well, turn them up a little. Maybe people want them up. But it's not. I went over to my friend's house. I know her pretty well. She had all these Christmas like bulbs, like those big outdoor like Italian restaurant bulbs all over the... And it was too fucking bright. Not borderline. When I unscrewed enough, I unscrewed not if it was my house. I was like, don't do dark as your house, but this is too bright. She comes back out. She goes, who ruined my ambiance? So I'm like, you fuck. You know, because people started going out on the patio. And I didn't make it up. I'm not sick in my head. People start going. She starts screwing the bulbs back in. I'm not kidding you. Boo! They don't know I unscrewed them and then she screwed them back in. They just think, who's... These people weren't out there before. And that happens a lot at comedy clubs. When I go, bring the lights down. I feel like the club thinks I paid the audience. You know, they'll be like, applaud. Like, they want to be in the dark.
Yeah,
right.
All of a sudden, especially they didn't know it was bad.
Club.
Especially at comedy clubs.
Because you don't want to, because there's something about when people can see each other in the audience. Now they're, all those insecurities about laughing at jokes that they're a little ashamed of.
Right.
They just get enhanced.
There's reason, right? Yes. There's not just... It didn't just happen at everywhere. But anyway, I always say it in my show, I know you're going to think, oh, no, my house is great. No one's sitting in the audience going, I don't know shit about... Because no one wants to think they don't know how to... It's not really lighting. It's atmosphere. No one wants to think... And if you want to make even a guy that's a tough guy or pretends to be a tough guy give a shit that I'm calling him on this, having people over and having a cool place to hang out. Most people think they're good at it.
Yeah.
But I say, no, they're not. Go home, open your hallway bathroom door.
Okay.
And now look at it. Like, you have, go look at yourself in the bathroom. Is that the bathroom that everybody that comes to your house, whether it's a party, whether it's a dinner, well, six people, they're going to go in a bathroom. Are they going to look? You think it's in the gray area? I always say, take off your boxing gloves. I'm not going to be there. If I'm right, you'll never have to fucking tell me. But honestly, at least by yourself, open the door in the hallway and go, okay, and do it at night, not during the day.
Day.
Go in there at night, open the door. Remember, what you think you look like, you're at the party, you're walking around. Most of the time, if things are all right, you think you feel you're having good. You left the house, you feel good. Then you go into someone's bathroom, you go, oh, I look like shit. And then you return to the party. So is that what you want at your house? Would you do it if someone said, you know, if you put more lights in your bathroom, you can make people feel shittier. Would you go, oh, do that? So don't do it the way you ended up having it, the outcome of this.
You know what? It's so funny you say that, because sometimes we go backstage at comedy clubs and maybe it's like not just a comedy club, but they do more theatrical performances and they have those like makeup lights around. And when those things turn on,
what?
I'm like, I'm going outside in public like this?
Right.
Are you shitting me? I need a team.
and you think you're crazy. I know those round bulbs. You think, well, but until you go to a place like, there's a new theater.
The Dynasty one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you love it?
I love it.
I have seen you there so much, and I have not been there yet, and I feel so bad because I just saw Jamie, and I was just like, dude, this place looks unbelievable. And is it just, I mean.
It's like everything he wanted to do at the Improv. This is why I'm glad it's successful, because I don't know, not everybody at the Improv. There's people that were around him that went, let Jamie do what he wants.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever stopped him, not his peers that worked with him and equals. But no one over there on the corporate level is going, this is more, just so much more than Jamie went and had success. And now I'm glad he had success. But I wonder, as a business person, like a guy that, are they over there? They're not, by the way, but I'll ask, going... Because it's okay to fuck up in business. You just have to, the good business people acknowledge it. You can have big fuck ups, but if Monday you get everyone together and you go, here's what we learned. They're not doing this. I hope they hear this, because they should be doing this.
Yeah.
Someone in the corporate level should go, hey, listen, we know a lot. And it's okay if we don't know something, but we're going to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Okay, we had him here. Do we all realize that Jamie was here? Hey, when he was here, we didn't know if he was right or wrong, so we didn't do anything wrong. Now he's there and he's having a lot of fucking success. All he wanted to do here was exactly what he did there for probably a lot less money.
Yeah.
All he wanted to do was put the Improv on the map by creatively making it the coolest place. Now he's over there and you see it's working. So you should say, okay, no big deal, but we fucked up.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's say we know a lot about a lot. But maybe in the comedy area, we need now to go get another Jamie and let him fucking do what he wants to do. No, they're not. Everything they're not aware of that.
No.
They're not going, oh, it's God, so we had him. He was ours. All he wanted to do was make this place awesome.
Do they put comedy blinders on? Is it just a...
There's something about... and it's not just the comedy clubs. It's the entertainment industry. It certainly is hell... politicians, where some people just can't admit they made one mistake. And it's exactly what you said. You can be right 99 out of 100 times. Just the one time you're wrong, say, know what? I was wrong there.
And how do we learn from that?
How do we learn from it?
And fix that.
And I'm not even, in my scenario, I'm not even like being snipey. I'm going, if I knew you were over there, if someone said, Todd, actually, I'd be like, oh, cool. Because that's the same thing to do.
Yeah, right.
But I morbidly want to know, like, what are they saying? And by the way, there's still people over there that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them. And they want to do, they're the Jamie that now is there. And they're great and they're creative.
But you got to recognize when you do get somebody like Jamie that is thinking outside the box and is really doing some cool, just has ideas that are, you know, inconsistent with what has been there prior, and recognize that, like, oh, maybe if we follow him down that path for a little bit, we could, you know, and what's the real risk that you're taking? And also, we're in a business where risk is good.
Right.
Yeah.
I learned, you know what, it does make me give a little less advice sometimes because, I mean, they say if you think no one's going to take your advice, then you're just proving you like to talk. So there are moments in my life go, you know, Todd, you can prove you like to talk, but not that much. You'll shut the fuck up sometimes. And it's, are people taking your advice, or I forgot what I was going to say.
And kids, that's a lesson. Pot is a hell of a
drug. Oh my God. What were we just talking about?
Well, about the improv and Jamie.
That no place will ever be successful unless somebody, and this to me, every club should hear because I want them. I say this shit because I would like them to go, he's fucking right.
Yeah.
No club can be, and successful doesn't mean 10 years. Good clubs have 20, 30, 40 year runs.
Yeah.
So you can be in the middle of doing real well now and think, oh, it doesn't apply to me. Yes, it does.
Yeah, sure.
No club can do really well unless somebody on site that knows about comedy has power.
Mm-hmm.
Has power. Because it tends to be the guy who ran the Applebee's for 30 years, and they need him. A comedy club is also a restaurant.
Yeah.
I get it. If they heard this, I'm always thinking, I get it. It is. Yeah. Thank God for that food, and thank God for those drinks.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
But at the end of the day, we all know the answer.
What are you going there for?
They're coming for comedy. Yeah. You get to serve that food because they're coming for stand-up comedy. So so if you have someone, I'll give you one example of something that could be snuffed out. If somebody that knows about comedy has power, even in the improv Melrose, let's say they know about comedy and they have power, the new chef brings out a dish and he goes and she eats it and he eats it and goes, wow, this is really good. It's not the taste of it, but she goes, we can't do it in the showroom, it takes too long. End the story. And that's the type of things when no one has power, they're serving dishes in the middle of the show because no one that knows about comedy has power. So when that meeting was had at 2:00 on Monday afternoon, no, that person can't snuff it out or know to throw out a heckler, even though if they're going to have to throw out 10 people, because if they throw out the heckler, he's with 10 people and they're going to lose $220 on liquor. The person that knows about comedy that's on site goes, don't be penny wise, dollar foolish.
Yeah. Let's make the show good so everyone in the showroom has
a
great time.
That people come here and
buys more, comes back.
And people see that too. When they're at shows and they see a bunch of people tossed out, like
they
for some bullshit, they go, oh, cool, this club doesn't fuck around. And also, they like it to a certain extent. I mean,
well,
it shows that the club is taking ownership.
I've thrown people out before, and where the rest of the audience starts cheering, they go, oh, fuck, finally. And I'm like, oh shit! So this was a problem before I got to it.
Yeah,
and that's when you kind of realize, like, yeah, the thing that I didn't think everyone was paying attention to. Yeah, they all noticed it.
You know what? Exactly what you just said. Because you know what? No one really. At the good clubs, let's say B+ to A+, heckling, we always say no heckling, remember this, that it's loud talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Lewis Lee said, and that's harder because heckling, they're mad, but they know that's wrong. So when you tell them to be quiet for talking, they can't believe it, especially if talking 10 is the loudest, not yelling under the category, 10 is the loudest. If they're at a 4, at a comedy club, a good comedy club, 4 is too much.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the nobody talking again.
And when you call them out for it, they never. I've never been in a situation where calling someone out and being like, "You gotta just bring it down," because I'm trying to power through and be professional. But there's only it's been 10 minutes, and you're just like, "There's background. It's just too loud." And every time it's been, we were just laughing, we were just talking about how funny you were.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I do respect your boldness to be such a piece of shit in front of a bunch of other strangers and lie so blatantly like that. I do respect you to come up with an answer so quickly. But guess what?
Such a lie.
I've heard it.
Yes, we've all, don't you? That's why in the announcement, that video, yeah. I used to say, don't say.
So that was such a great video, by the way.
I don't
know
why they stopped using it.
It was one of the, probably the best pre-show video in all. We've both been to so many comedy clubs around the country, and it was concise, and it was funny, you know, and it was real, and it wasn't so like, produced, but it was. You were so fucking good in it.
Yeah, for those of you,
is it on your reel? Because it should be.
No, but I could get it. But for a second, it said we are a comedy club before a restaurant.
Yes.
And what it says is, look, you are the customer, and we do value you. I always feel that way. I don't think it's cool to be mean to people.
No.
But that video laid down the law that, look, we love you, but there's some rules here.
Right.
And the only one that's better that I've ever seen on the planet than that one, I know that's mine, is the comedy addict, Jared.
From Subway?
No, yeah, Jared from Subway. The comedy addict in Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
He made his own. Mm-hmm. And it is it's better than mine.
Wow.
Because it educates them.
Yeah.
And oh, hold on, I'm sorry. Let me just, so that what I was going to say about the shushing, like Brad said.
Yes.
That when they walk by, you know, he goes, I used to walk by like on a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being the loudest. It was like a 2, really, because maybe just the 2 tables around them could hear. And you know, you're just opening up a business. You got a mortgage to pay. It's just a 2, like a 2, but a 2 for the tables next to it. He goes, I remember one night just going over and I'm like, I knew they were going to get annoyed. And I had to have them leave. It was a table of 4. I got thanked 3 times as I was walking out because I had to go back, and the one lady left her purse, and thank you, thank you, thank you. And he goes, that's when I learned it's not enough to have a doorman stand on one end of the room. For heckling, one doorman can control a room of 300, because heckling, you can stand anywhere in the room. But for talking, someone has to roam the room, because someone could be all the way in the back and just loud enough that 13 people or 14 hear it. I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But that's a big deal.
And the comic can't hear them.
The comic can't. I've had that. That's when I learned.
After a show, someone's like, God, that was so great. I wish these people weren't talking next to us the whole time. And you're like, fuck, I had no clue because you were 300 feet away from me.
Yeah. That's exactly.
Mm-hmm. What do you do about that? I mean,
I tell doorman now, that's what I just said to you. I go, do me a favor, and I'm always super nice, and I go, you know, just please roam the room. Because I've learned when I go, I used to say, you know, to a club I'm new at, I go, by the way, just checking, you know, is there a door person in the room 100% of the time? Not like, you know, you give them a few examples and they get, you know, what you're talking about. And I'm always nice. I go, you know, something like, oh, he watches the show. He's just changing the sign outside. No. I go, you know, I just, when I'm there, I do like someone in the room 100% of the time. But then I realize that's not good enough, because they would have someone planted in the room.
Right.
Now I go, have them roam around. And I also, if I'm feeling a little bit more asky, I go, but he doesn't have to be frowning.
Yeah.
Like, nothing wrong with a guy. Hey, laughing is the, if you stand behind a group of people that need to, you don't even need to talk to, you know, just your presence.
Just presence, yeah.
You can laugh at the show. Just teach them. Yeah, this is what you do. You don't have to stand there like a mean doorman if you don't want to. Just watch the show and enjoy it near that group.
It's amazing what just that authority figure close to them will do sometimes.
Yes.
And just because I've seen some clubs that do it very well, where sometimes talking gets a little loud and the doorman just walks and stands next to the table.
Yeah.
Doesn't say anything to him, just stands there. And they kind of just look up and go, oh shit. Okay.
Sometimes
and
they get it, right?
They kind of self-police. And I just want our listeners to be clear, when we were referencing a video earlier, if you've been to an improv, you've seen Todd Glass.
I think I know it. Okay, you're walking by the improv.
Yeah.
Okay. Walking by the improv. You're thinking, hey, let's go and see a show. And then maybe 4 people want to see a show. The other 4 people don't. But you all go in. And then the other people that don't really want to see the show, then they start talking. Then the door guy comes over. The door guy comes over. He goes, hey, could you please keep it down? You go, we were just laughing. Okay, now listen. Nobody's ever been thrown out of an improv for laughing. That's what we love. You come in here. There's good quality comedy. You just laugh during the show. Laugh. Shut up. How many things in life are that easy? Don't go, but my uncle's the mayor. We don't give a shit. Now, a lot of people are going, that's a negative way to start out a show. I go, that's because you were going to talk. We don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And then, dude,
by the way, that was so meta for us.
Dude, that was unbelievable.
Because we've been seeing you do this video for years.
I haven't done that. Like, the only, that's more in my head that when I was in Dallas once, the whole staff. So I, you know, I'm in the back of the room. They're starting the show. You watch that video roll. They go, do you want us to play that when you're here? I'm like, sometimes I would say no. Funny, but and then the whole fucking staff, wherever they were at in the room, did it with me on the video. Wow. I was
how
like,
cool
what
is
the
that?
Fuck is... this is... That, and then you realize, oh, they planned this. So that's even extra special. You're like... it makes your heart melt a little. You know? Like they said, so when Todd's here Monday, you know, whatever night.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that was, I mean, that's, that, by the way, that's his start. That's to me like if Tom Hanks was here and he started reciting lines from Forrest Gump. That's how big of a deal that video was for me. Like when I started and the first few years had a show at the Improv just to get spots there and just was there, just there so much hanging out and like to the start. And that was all, so it's like, it's ingrained. And it also was so comforting because it was like, you know, the familiarity of it, but also you're like, oh, what a great way to start the show. It almost felt like you were in good hands because this was happening before. You know, and you're like, oh, this is giving a great heads up to the audience. And it's not like, and it's funny. You had Brewer in the background. Then he does
Brewer laugh after. That's the other video. That's the one they came in and did next.
Right.
A sequel.
That's the one they did next. And nothing to do with Brewer at all. I always feel like I have to say that because genuinely, like, just
that one's cool too. Yeah,
the corporate, the one with Brewers. By the time
the one just
it
you
was
at the
corporate.
Table, it was you at piano or the table.
Me just standing outside the Bray
that's
Improv.
Right, that's right,
outside the Bray Improv.
Yeah,
but I wanted Mike Carano, who was a sound guy there, was the first one to ever have a video that said "Be quiet," and we just wanted to. I wanted to make it in my head when he asked me to do it. I was like, I want to have the MC go up to the audience, a more civil audience. And I go, what would deliver the MC to the stage? And it did. It worked. When by the MC would get up there, they'd be like, you gotta bring it down. You know?
Also, laugh, shut up is such a great
laugh.
Way to
shut
just...
up, laugh, shut up. How many things in life are that easy? Oh, but my uncle's the mayor. We don't give a shit.
You should do. There's got to be another string of just like public situation setup videos that you could do for, or even just like, you know, for
Todd Glass explains manners,
or for high school, like, or for high school guys fucking for the first time, like just put it in, don't cry, put it in, don't cry, like just, I don't know, there's got to be a bunch of, you know, don't text your dad for advice.
Yeah,
like,
we just need you to break down,
up and down,
yeah, we just need you to break down like every simple thing in life.
Yeah, it's funny.
So, hey,
a little mantra.
Are you drunk right now? Are you gonna text your ex? Don't fucking do it. Just little.
Are you drunk right now? Are you gonna text your ex? Don't do it. Are you drunk right now? Are you gonna text your ex? Don't do it. How many things in life are that easy? Oh, you're drunk? Then don't text your ex.
Postmates the hash browns.
Exactly. Done.
How was starting? Do you start comedy in Philadelphia where you grew up? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And were you? We always like to ask this of guests because we're so curious because it's like what. As a kid, where did you develop your funny? Were you funny in school? Were you a class clown? Did you get in trouble? Like, what was... How much of Todd Glass now was in, like, 10-year-old Todd Glass?
Now that I'm sillier on stage like I want to be, like, over the years, you get more comfortable to be... Some people, whatever they want to do, it takes... You know the deal.
You're how many years in?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I started in 1981.
Wow.
I started in 81. I was in high school.
And my parents were used to, both of us even born.
No, my dad and mom had been fucking, but hadn't fucked and made me yet.
Okay,
yeah, that's how I think of it. I like to think of them doing it.
When I was,
it makes me feel good about them being divorced. At one point, they loved each other enough to make me.
You know, think about that.
Yeah,
had to be someone unless it was through a sheet. Are you Jewish?
I mean, he is. I am. So maybe
they fucked through a sheet.
Wait a minute. That's why your middle name is Thread Count.
And by the way.
Hilarious. I'm putting two and two together.
And that's, by the way, that's going to be the name of my special, Fuck Through a Sheet.
Fuck Through a Sheet. Oh,
and God. You don't mention until the very end of the special.
Right. Fuck Through a Sheet.
All right,
so I started, I was definitely, like to make my parents laugh and did bits and loved stand-up. Even when I was 11, I loved Don Rickles and like the Living Legends. Like,
so you watch like the old roasts and stuff?
I watched... Any, like, if stand up on the, any, there used to be talk shows like in the afternoon, like 3. Well, I guess there are again, too, but for a while there weren't.
Mm-hmm.
So, would watch any comedian on there. And then I would watch, if it was the Tonight Show, I would like really, especially on Friday when I didn't have school the next day, Most of the time, my parents let me watch it any day. It was anything I enjoyed. Let him. Maybe he'll take an interest in it. But stand up then, I was obsessed with stand up comedy. You know, even if I didn't know what it meant, I would some comedian. I'm forgetting his name now, but I used to Alan King. I didn't even know what he was talking
Alan
about.
Alan King.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's a reference.
I know.
Would your parents would introduce stand up into the, because you hear some people are like, my dad was playing the Carlin records.
No, my brother listened to George Carlin, and I remember hearing that, but it was more on TV. Even when I was in like this sounds weird, but you know when a band when you know a band before everyone else knows a band, yeah. And then. You know, then when everybody else knows them, you sort of get like, oh, I knew them back, which really doesn't matter.
I knew Pfeiffer fighting before you even knew that could be a thing that people saying about flying like Superman.
I told you that. Yeah. You knew it. Yeah.
All right. Aren't you glad they're popular if you like them so much?
Yeah. Yeah. You think they wanted to just perform for you at those bars you got to see them at?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're successful now. That's good. They have a bigger audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, I caught myself doing that back when. Now, look, these were not Rodney and Don Rickles and Alan King, like just living legends, you know, and older guys even back then, I would think. Yeah. Then when I was in high school, like I would watch like Jay Leno and Jerry Seinfeld and on like those talk shows.
Right.
But I felt like I was the only one who knew who they were. And then
back
when they started.
Leno was edgy.
What? Yo, he used to show up at Letterman. It was really great. You know, it was very like just, you know, just. It was
he used to what show
vintage Jay when Jay was, you know, is if you watch old Letterman's when Jay would come out, it was just great, you know. But this was even
was
before
he super
that.
Edgy.
He had a you know what he had a what do you call it a bite
yeah.
like some yeah. grit
yeah
but about stuff that wouldn't get too personal where the masses could enjoy it but proving you can still have grit even if he would annihilate like he would. By the way, I haven't even seen him live.
I saw him at Comedy Magic 5 years ago. And could not have been more blown away and impressed by somebody I had just late night TV expectations for.
But the show is not, you know, was never my favorite thing.
No. Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling, I like to be
fair
to somebody.
But on stage, he loosened his tie. Sure. He was leaning on a mic stand, holding a mic, and I was like, oh, there's a comic. That's, you know.
He would come in. You know what? It taught me and the other comedians something that must have, because I remember he just told a joke. No, yet he was the headliner, of course. But, you know, hey, even if I was headliner, middling, I never, hey. And I remember thinking how powerful that looked. Jerry Seinfeld did the same thing, you know. They would just, came out, ladies and gentlemen, and they went right to that mic. Well, I see, what was Jay Leno's? I see, because he would have the same opener.
Doritos had the new Cool Ranch coming out. And then he's like, he holds up a bag, and they're like, we got to make him a spokesman. No, that's how it happened, yeah.
That would wonder how much extra they would give him if he did that live.
What if he did Doritos and Pringles and he was the first comic to get a dual chip campaign?
Possible.
Nancy. It was a funny joke. Yeah. I see Nancy Reagan's. Nancy Reagan just won the Humanitarian of the Year award. That's good to see. You know, good thing she beat out that conniving bitch, Mother Teresa.
And for people that grew up with Jay just as the Tonight Show host, that even just that joke right there, just Jay Leno saying conniving bitch Mother Teresa, that's super edgy for him.
Yeah, and it wasn't punching down. It was just with grit, talking about a lot of shit,
clever,
putting it together, some really cool observations, and then it was great, and he would annihilate. Like it was just it was just like orchestrated, you know. It was really. And then like what were so like his others? Like my friend made an illegal tape, so for years we had it. It would be like, you know, I'm looking at this hand the other day. Are you between the ages of 60 and 80 and just thinking about life insurance? Yeah, a lot of guys are just 60 thinking, 80 thinking about life insurance. You know, honey, the kids are going to be 60 next year. And, well, God forbid we get in a motorcycle accident. I just hate to see them homeless. You can't walk around with a bike helmet. Oh, no, everyone's got something they want to say to you. I'm in line the other day at the grocery store. Guy comes over, he sees my helmet. He goes, hey, you got a bike there? I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to be nice. He goes, yeah, my cousin used to ride a bike, drove straight into a threshing machine. He won't be shaving for a while. All right, well, thank you very much, sir. Thank you for that. Definitely appreciate it. Thank you.
Classic. Was there ever a point, do you remember thinking like, oh, I can do that?
Well, I knew there was, I didn't even know what a comedy club was.
Yeah.
like to me, I thought it was college students telling jokes. Mm-hmm, I didn't know that unless you were like George Carlin or the big. I didn't know like what's
how do you get to where they're at, right?
I didn't even know they existed.
Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't know this because there weren't comedy clubs in every city. So my friend Albert Nalibotsky, I should mention his name.
That literally sounds like a joke name. That sounds like Rodney Dangerfield, Dr. Vinny Boombach.
Right. Hey, Dr. Vinny Boombach.
Yeah.
Dr. Vinny Boombach. We always make that up when that was Rodney's fake doctor, obviously. Yeah. But when people go, I go, my doctor told me to eat candy late at night. What's your doctor's name? Dr. Vinny Boombach. They go, Todd, that's Rodney's doctor. That's a fake doctor. You're lying. I go, a bit. I go, no, he's my doctor too. I saw Wendy Lehman in the waiting room, so maybe a lot of comics use him, but I don't. I mean, he's my doctor. But so I found out there was an open mic night, and we went. We would go down to the Comedy Works, me and my friends. I was in high school. We would see, like Jerry Seinfeld. Even that back then, they were big events. Gary Shanley, Jerry Seinfeld, Stephen Wright, Richard Lewis. Rich Hall. Bill Maher. Just the list went on and on of great comics. Eddie Murphy. I remember he had just done SNL. That was his intro. This one of the newest cast members from SNL. And I would always look at their checks to see how much they made. Because we worked there. Oh, I was a door guy there. After like a first year of comedy, I was a door guy. I would look at the checks. Eddie Murphy made $500. We were like, are you shitting me? We thought that was a lot.
Yeah, because when you said, are you shitting me? I'm like, yeah.
It's not
that much.
So then I went on Wednesday on an open mic night in Philly. Yeah. Who pushed you?
Did you say, I mean, what got you... compelled enough to just go down there?
Because before that, I would go to I was 15. I would go to, I worked at my friends, not to brag, had a Dairy Queen in the mall. Not
jeez,
by the way, brag.
If I knew somebody with a DQ, with access to a DQ.
I mean, you know what? It's the way I made friends in high school because I had the key to the place.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So the movie theater was two doors down. So I would bring everybody in. Oh, yeah, you guys can have whatever you want. And then they would just take Buster bars and ice cream. And, if long as I didn't have to make a milkshake, it's late at night.
Yeah.
So there was a bar in there called I forget the name of it. I would go in there and do Rodney Dangerfield jokes.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, not like he's a Rodney Dangerfield impersonator. Just, most people, I was so young, even if they,
Well, because comedy is one of those things where no one sits down before you start and tells you the rules.
Right.
You just do it.
You learn them and you make mistakes. That's why most people that have a bad reputation, it's because maybe they deserve it, because you always make mistakes. I think most people are harder on you as you start to make a living, and then you have to you develop a new relationship with comedy.
Yeah.
And you hopefully one of the earliest ones is doing Rodney Dangerfield jokes But I didn't know. I knew that that wasn't.
You knew you weren't going to be famous doing his act.
Yeah, and I knew that I couldn't go to a comedy club and do that, but it was at a bar. And by the way, if you're going, well, how old is he in this story? Look, it all gets a little mushy after a while, but I think I was young. I wasn't 21, but I always looked so old that I never had a problem.
Really?
Yeah, never. I was probably at that point 16, and I would go in.
That's
cool, I wasn't drinking.
It's
but
cool
I,
to look older when you're younger, right?
It's the only time looking older has paid off is then and now. Because now you're like, when you get to be like, actors that are like 80 and you go, you don't even know. You're like, I thought they were like, so I'm hoping it pays off as I get older. Yeah. But I never looked young my whole life. I think I look 40.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges is 106 and he's just constantly looking like he's 52.
Yeah, you just stay at that level. Yeah. So I never looked young, but hopefully it'll level.
You do now.
I'm trying.
Yeah, you look good.
Thank you. I try to, keep the weight off. But that's how the comedy was.
And you just got that bug. I mean, that when first time you went up, was it just like, do you remember what you talked about?
Yeah, I meant a teeny bit. I remember I brought all my friends down from high school.
To watch you do Rodney's act?
No, by that time I wasn't doing Rodney's act.
Okay.
Because you needed people to go up, or you just like were so excited that you wanted support? Or
I just didn't want to go myself.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I didn't want to go myself and my friend. Like, I think Dave Olson, John Biederman, Jim Madden. We all went down. We had been going to see shows there a lot, but and we always heard there was an open mic night. We started going to open mic nights, but I didn't perform.
Gotcha.
And then one, I said, I'm going to go up. I go, there's a 90% chance that I'm going to go up. 95, I think I said. And then I wasn't trying to trick my friends, but the first time I didn't go up. They go, you said there was a 95% chance you were going to go up.
Well, 5% chance.
Exactly. They didn't see that loophole. So then the next time I went up, and I went up. I was a little crazy. I don't remember the jokes necessarily, but I did do this bit with a can of whipped cream, and I go, these things never work, do they? And then I squirted it. My brother was in the first row, and I squirted it in his face. I was 16. You know?
Yeah.
But and then I had some material, and then everyone was like, even if you didn't do song parodies back then, like if you weren't a song parody guy, there were guys that would come out with a guitar and do just song parody after song parody. They're in my head for the rest of my life. If you had one, you just sang it out of nowhere. Yeah, so I was like, I remember it was like, cheese whiz. It was that to the parody of the only problem, cheese whiz, cheese whiz. The only problem is I can't get it out of the jar. I don't even know what's a parody to now, but cheese whiz was hard to get out of the jar.
Isn't it amazing when you look back at some of that material and you go, wow, that, like, I did that and that sparked this life.
Right. Like, what was that? How should that? That should be why I never did stand up again. Maybe,
right. You know? Well, I mean, well, the thing about and I love watching your shows. First of all, because everybody does.
You're not only just like that.
Think you know what's going to happen in a Todd Glass show. Yeah. You are sorely mistaken. Your last special, which is currently available on Netflix,
Act Happy.
You have a damn band with you, like a jazz band.
That was brilliant, and so. I mean, I can't imagine.
I started doing it on the road.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at first it's just fun. We grew up, like, you have a band, like Letterman has a band. You have a band, they accompany you. And I really liked it. And then they would just play for me, like, be usually a piano, a keyboard, and drums. Like, a tight keyboard and drummer can make a lot of noise. They can make a lot of clean sound. They'd play jazz as people were coming in. First, I just had them play for me. Then the two guys go, hey, do you want us to play as they're being seated? And I was like, I never thought about that. I went, yeah, do you mind? Like, to me, that was like an hour, sometimes 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Depends how long the club has a, you know, CD. And they go, no, we like to play. So we'll play. And it changed. I mean, if you're already in an all right club, it makes it that much better. But it can make a shabbier club chic. Like if you walked into a raw room, but up on stage, it's blue. I just blew the fuck out of whatever room I'm in.
Yeah.
Especially if it's cool shabby.
Yeah.
Like a place that's shabby, but it's awesome. Like best crowds in the world. You want to go there. They walk into a shabby room, but it's now deep blue. And there's two guys with black suits playing jazz.
It steps it's your
like,
game.
Oh, this is a... This is...
This
it doesn't
show.
Make it a little better. I love what a waitress said once. She goes, it doesn't make it a little better. She goes, it's fucking night and day. I'm like, I love you for saying that.
Yeah.
Because I think it is. I think you turn the corner and you're like, what?
Yeah.
So then the band, and then I added, like, if I'm in LA, I like to make it like, sometimes there's three band members. Like there's a drummer, a keyboard guy. Sometimes if I can get a trumpet, I'll get a trumpet. But
what a great sentence.
If
I can get a trumpet, I'll get a trumpet.
Yeah. But sometimes I'll have people sit in. They're just really fillers. Like one night there was three real band members, those three. And then I had two friends. I go, you want to be in the band tomorrow? Just wear a black suit. I give them bongos. I gave the other guy a triangle and I gave my other friend a ratchet.
I love that you that much trusted him.
But they know they're great. They know when I ask for ratchet, I'll give me a little ratchet. If we're doing a song, you want to come in with the tambourine, but just take my lead.
Yeah.
But when people walk in and see six people in suits, three up front, three in the back, and then you know I have these things for the music stands now that they bring, the musicians bring, but they just say the Todd Glass band, and it feels like you can make an event even as they're leaving.
Yeah,
that leaving can be so fucking like big and cool and still part of the show. Like as they're walking out, what do you play? That's why I always tell the clubs, don't put the get the fuck out lights on. Give me at least 4 or 5 minutes. Three minutes. I don't care.
Just still dark.
Turn the lights on so they can leave safely.
Right. Okay.
But and then the band plays like this cool Beatles medley.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so they play along to some pre-recorded music, and as they're leaving, it's like inspiration. It's like I watch them every night. I want to watch the crowd, and you see people taking it in. Like even this part's fun,
But you know what? That makes so much sense because when you go see a movie, the movie doesn't just go the end, fin, dark, lights up, and bye, and you leave in silence. It leaves with the credits and another song and another thing. So
even
it's just,
the credits for No One Stays For, there's still music. Pretty much you're out of the theater and the lights come up, but not like I say, they're not getting the fuck out of here.
That's a great idea because it's always it's always almost disheartening when you see a show and it's a stand-up show and there's so much energy and the jokes and it's killing and yada yada, and then the host goes on at the end and just goes, thank you, good night.
Yeah, they'll put some house music on. But yeah. Sometimes it takes 20 seconds, depending on the... Most clubs are pretty tight with that, but... Yeah, the...
And then you just see people kind of walk out in silence, like, we were just hooting and hollering 5 minutes ago.
I don't even have the MC go back on.
Yeah.
Because I realize in a theater, you don't. So, like, if someone's... Usually, I just have me in one act. Mm-hmm. So, I have the band do one big song, like, for 40 seconds.
Yep.
And then they bring on the first act. He does 10 minutes, he leaves. But... Even if he brings me on, I'm like, yeah, just after I'm done, from the back of the room, black me out and go, Ty Glass, ladies and gentlemen, the band will come in with music. No one goes back up on stage. For what? You got to convince me why that would make it better. I don't fight not to do it. I go, maybe pretend no one ever did it and try to sell me. Go, I know at the end you get a blackout, probably because of that you should leave them wanting, but can I make a suggestion? You might make it better. Okay, go ahead, convince me why it would be good to have an act go back up on stage and go, okay, next week we have fuck shit here. Oh, and God. I go, but they
don't all, let the name fool you. He's really clean.
They all know what they know. That's the problem. And they don't think, like, so they have legitimate concerns. Or what if we did? Sometimes when you're trying to push an act that's coming in New Year's Eve and it's a name that people will recognize, I get it. The MC goes back up on stage. Hey, don't forget, blank blank is here next week for New Year's Eve. I say, it's okay. You know what to do? Black it out. When I say goodnight, black it out. The band will play. Give me literally 15 seconds. Da-da-ba, whatever the band's playing. And then from the back mic, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, New Year's Eve, Chris Rock will be here or whoever it is.
Right.
So just let the show end.
Right. Let there be a period at the end of that show.
Yes.
So it's not like, okay, that thing's done. So you don't walk out. And the last thing you remember from the Todd Glass show is the host walking on stage and saying...
For what?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? That's genius. That's genius.
For what?
I love how you've become like John Taffer in Bar Rescue for comedy clubs. Like, you have this down to a science. Like,
you know, maybe it's because I'm still in clubs and I figure, you know, if I want people to come out, I want it to be like an event. All you got to do is go to one show to remind yourself what people do to come to a show. And I've learned over the years. I used to, you know, it's not like I was this when I was 21, but you do. We went to see Brian Regan, and we ate dinner, and we still had to park, and we still had to, even with getting ahead of the line.
You reference so well in your special.
Do a little Brian Regan impersonation.
You do a great impersonation.
But it was a lot to do, and then you realize people pay to park, they pay babysitters. Maybe they bought maybe they spent some money they really shouldn't, and they both know it. So
that's so courteous that you
I try
to be cognizant of that, because that is like,
I haven't always. I've had two situations where it should never happen again, or I'm gonna, you know, say I have a problem. But two situations where I drank so much, I got excited, and one I went back. I got on the radio the next day, because it was on a Thursday, and Preston and Steve were still on. I felt a little better that I said, everybody, if your name is at the door, I'm going to come back in 3 months. I'm going to do a free show. Mm-hmm. I thought, put your money where your mouth is. You know, well, apology isn't shit. So for what I did, I did 15 minutes and got off stage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Then I had one other time.
Somebody pulled you off, or you?
No,
just,
I just walked off.
What do you remember? Was there something you said? You don't remember?
I just blacked too much.
Yeah.
I blacked out. I couldn't, and then it happened again, embarrassingly, about a year ago, and I'm going to go back to the Comedy Cabaret or some other theater near there.
Well, that's cool,
and do it free show again. They have all the names, but guess what? It can't ever happen again.
Yeah,
I don't mind. I can have four drinks and have a nice show, even be a little silly.
Yeah,
does five make it horrible? No, but it starts dabbling into that area.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When I say I don't ever drink again, never, because I can't lie to myself, and I told myself if that ever happens again, you know, if the story is you've been doing comedy 30 years and it happened twice, that's the way the story has to end.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I can forgive myself for that.
Yes.
What about Tylenol PM? How many of those can you have before that show and still feel like you're Todd Glass at his best?
Do you drink before your shows?
You know, I just had two back-to-back weekends where I didn't drink at all. One, because I was going into one post-strep and I was on these antibiotics and I just couldn't. And then I did that, you know, just asshole thing where I was asking my doctor. I go, but I could have like one, right? He goes, what the fuck's wrong with you? He goes, you want to die? He goes, I just told you don't drink. It's dangerous. Yeah. And I go, all right.
You
go,
think they're just...
But like a half a tequila, if I'm having a fun time. He goes, you know what, man? He goes, do what you want to do.
So and just a,
like,
lemon drop shot is what you're saying.
But then, so I, but I,
something nice.
Yeah, but I didn't, and I was just so, I was just so locked in, man. And I was like, maybe I should stop. But even when I do before shows, I go up with something and I just take a sip. And it's more just to, like, wet the palate and calm the nerves. And just I don't know. But then, but I never end up drinking it on stage unless it's like a 2-show Saturday and I'm just been like, you know, it's just been a fun weekend. I'm just like, I want to have a little more. And then sometimes that energy of that show, people end up bringing drinks, and sometimes that happens. But I, you know, am noticeably, and I like to do about in the hour, probably 15 or so minutes of crowd work spaced, spread out, you know? And so it's night and day as far as like how much more focused I am with that. Yeah. And I can tell when I'm not as sharp, then I'm just like, oh, I drank too much, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's And by the way, I'm so paranoid that someone will listen and go, well, wait, I'm not saying there have been nights where, you know, I had a little too much to drink, but everyone had a good time.
Yeah.
And you're lucky.
Yeah, sure.
That can happen, you know, the least the better. But those, I'm talking about when I said those two incidences.
Right.
Where it was embarrassing.
And see, it's kind of loops back to what we were talking about earlier, where we talked about, hey, you can be right 99% of the time, but if you're wrong one time, admit and learn. You're learning.
I try.
Yeah.
And even with the things when I talk about comedy clubs, I've said this before, like, I don't, probably most of the things that I say about clubs are because I took them from clubs. Like, that's the great thing about ideas. Clubs don't mind. Matter of fact, if there's the best club in the world and another club calls, as long as they're not, you would think they wouldn't do this because they could open up in the same city, but overwhelmingly they're flattered to go, hey, we're opening up a club in Vermont and we heard everybody raves about you.
Sure.
What if we come hang out and see, they're always like, you know, they say, yeah, I know clubs do it for each other all the time. Yeah.
I've always wondered why that doesn't happen more. If I was opening up a comedy club, I would go to the top club. I would go to some of the best improvs or the Comedy Works in Denver or wherever, comedy club on state. We can all name our favorites.
Yeah.
And we would just say, like, what do you do? And copy that exactly.
You would think that, of course, you would think that, Brad, but like, it is funny. You know, that's why with the owner of Helium, he did that with Acme. And I went, that's brilliant. He goes, well, I went to the Montreal Comedy Festival, the owner of Helium, who there's like five of them now. And he said, I kept asking, hey, what's your favorite club? I heard a few, but I heard Helium more than anybody. I heard Acme more than anybody. He goes, so I contacted Acme and said, how would you be a part? Mm-hmm. And I went, that's brilliant to Mark Grossman. And he goes, well, it's not really brilliant. It's just common sense. I go, you know what? It's funny you say that because it is just common sense, but common sense that most people wouldn't do.
Right.
So I'm going to say it's brilliant. Most of the time, people have ideas of what a comedy club will be that makes it work.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I don't want to shit on that because you can make a good thing better, most of the, like, I don't want to be like, if somebody like say, well, no one does that. I don't say no to a new idea because no one does it. Fuck it. It might be a new idea that no one's done that works.
We're comics. We see new stuff all the time that goes, wow, didn't know that
Unless
would work.
You're Matt Lauer giving out dodos. There's a reason nobody does that, you know? And you got fired, so you paid the price. But hey, take the chance.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Yeah, it's not, they don't do it. They have ideas they think are going to work and they don't. And if they ran it by somebody, I always say, I wouldn't say no. I would explain, I would sell my opinion and it would make sense. But really all the ideas I have are just from being able to let go of things that I thought were right when I hear something better. I used to play loud music as they were coming into a club.
Yeah.
And then I forget who it was. They go, they weren't telling me what to do. They were just talking about what they like. And I remember going, they're right. That put one on if you want to get their energy going, but let them talk. Give a chill, cool vibe. Music they never heard any. They didn't hear it in the car on the way over.
Right.
So I go, well, that's not the way I did it. I used to make the Be Quiet announcement with music when I was at a club and they let me make it. Oh, yeah, put that betting music in. Good evening and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget with the music. I did that for 10 years.
Did you do your own announcement?
I would do, I as soon as I could, I started doing my own announcement.
Cool.
Even sometimes when I was middling and it wasn't that I was drawing enough people because I drew none, the clubs, a lot of times they would be happy.
The
sound guy doesn't want
to
make it. No, in some cases they do.
Because the sound guy's got five other buttons to press and he's a sound guy because he's not necessarily a performer.
Yeah. A lot of times those guys are like, hey, welcome to the club, you guys.
Right. Or they're too loud.
Yeah.
Or they're too loud. So I was making my own announcement with music. But guess what? I went to the San Francisco.
Punchline?
I went to the Punchline and I noticed all of a sudden the lights went down.
Yeah.
And ladies and gentlemen, we have your attention, please. And the guy waited for about 10 seconds and it got quiet. Maybe he repeated it on Saturday Night Late Show. And then with no music, we'd like to take this opportunity to welcome here to the Punchline. And I went, That's boom, the fucking that's way it, to do
right?
it. Just, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite clubs in the world.
Yeah. That's the only club with a bar that I'm okay with.
Yeah, right? Oh, man, I have closed that place down many a nights.
You know what I mean? But, like, there's no noise.
Yes. Yeah. Most of the time when you see a bar in the club, you're like, great, I'm going to be telling jokes over a blender.
Yeah, along the back. People go, well, the Punchline has it in San Francisco. I go, well, you're not them. And by the way, if there was already a wall up at the Punchline, they wouldn't have knocked it down. But they really also care about comedy tremendously. Yeah. So the
ball is just on point.
They're trying to be quiet.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
One thing I love about you, Todd, is that you.
And just this one thing.
Yeah, just this one thing. Yep. Nothing else. No, but you allow yourself to be silly. You don't mind it. You take chances on stage. You talked about the Montreal Comedy Festival. I was there with you one time where during a middle of a party, like the closing night party, you got the DJ to announce. Yeah, see, you know this.
What?
So all of a sudden, we're at the Funny or Die party, which is this massive outdoor festival.
By the way, I didn't think people were going to think it's serious.
Yeah. So, but I did. I think a lot of people did. All of a sudden, the Katy Perry music goes quiet.
Can I add one more thing? The yes. DJ is like...
He's in a tower. Ivory tower.
So I'm like, how can I get up to him? I wanted to... So somehow, Zoe Friedman,
yes.
she was obsessed. I go, Zoe, how do I get this note up to him? She did it. There was a trap door. She went up this ladder. So all of a sudden...
Yeah, all of a sudden, the music stops. And the DJ like makes this announcement. We're like, ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to announce the Comedian of the Year award
at the festival.
At the festival, ladies and gentlemen, please give a round of applause for the winner of the Comedian of the Year award, Todd Glass. Everybody,
I didn't win it. I felt like they were congratulating me. I'm like, no, I thought everyone would know that. Like, as soon as they heard it, like, oh, there's no comedian. But then someone goes, well, there have been like comedian at the festival. They could have comedian at the festival. So I go, oh, now I'm just spent the whole night. No, I didn't. My friend goes, why don't you just say thank you the next time? But he made it like most graduate. Hilarious. He didn't just do it. I thought over the music, he's going to go, hey, we're like, thank you. You know, as he's one song's fading out and the other one shoots in, squeeze it in there. No, he turns up. Can we have your attention, please? And I was like, knew what he was doing. I'm like, oh no, this is not, it's just supposed to be like, you would think I would like it better.
Thankfully, I was near you when the thing happened, so I saw your face and go, oh, okay, it's a bit.
It's a bit.
But like, if I had not been near you and not see you kind of queen wave to the audience, right. then I would have been like, oh, hey, congratulations, Todd. Didn't know that was going on.
By the way, I like that Chris Farley picture. Who did that?
A comedian named Brady Matthews.
He really does
a lot of paintings. Yeah, it's, I mean, that was... I have probably the guys who influenced me the most, probably in comedy, Farley, Robin Williams, Jim Carrey.
Good ones. Do you ever go back and just watch Farley stuff on SNL?
Yeah.
It still makes me.
Can I be honest? Probably every couple months.
Like, really?
Yeah. There's just something. It's not even like. Sometimes I just see one thing, if it's Tommy Boy on or something, or somebody says something, and I do it that night. But quite honestly, just innately, as a part of like just my being, I'm like, I go out of my way to do it every few months because it's just like, it's unbelievable.
It's visceral.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
It's like, you know.
It's next level. It's also, I feel like when I'm watching it, I'm like, I don't feel that way about a lot of things where you're just like, oh, there's just so much.
He was when he would be on Letterman, you know what? Letterman loved him because Letterman, like when he came out, he put a suit on for him.
Yeah.
He performed.
Yes.
Like, that's what the word I heard on Letterman was like, come, you know, he liked especially comics that they had, they planned the appearance. They knew what they were going
to
do.
Which, by the way, seems so basic to me. Like, yeah, you're on David Letterman. You should probably figure out what the hell you're going to do.
You would think.
Be funny.
You would think.
Some people just walk out.
Even Bruce Willis would have planned things sometimes in Letterman because he loved it. He's like, this is not what people were expecting.
No, he loved. Oh, so I don't know all the brothers, but Kevin and John, and I don't hang out with as much anymore, but back like 5-6 years ago, you know, they're brothers. So they are very, very much like Chris, this like little kid energy in this adult body. And hanging out with those two can be like, as close as if I ever got to hang out with Chris. It's, I know it's that same, it's just,
Well, it's hard to explain, but it's very silly and very very like it's hard
childlike.
To explain. Childlike, yeah.
Has it influenced where you've kind of your act has kind of gone and just the fun you're having on stage?
Well, just to be, you know, anytime I see anyone be like, because you know, any level of silliness or deep, it doesn't matter what, it could be just silliness or deep or political or social, whatever they want, and I see them do it, I'm always like, remember, but especially when it's silly, I go, remember that you can do anything you want. Like, don't have these parameters. And when you see someone do it well, you're like, fuck, that still works as stand-up.
Yeah.
It still works. Hey, look, there's a fine line. Once I'm like, no, and I think it's a lot of jokes. It can be, it doesn't have to be slapstick, but it's a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
When you go to see a stand-up, that's why people love it. It's going to be joke, joke. It doesn't have to be loud. It doesn't, you know, you go to see Todd Berry, a calm guy. It's still joke. And I think they want that. But if as long as it's that, then those guys remind me, like, what was I going to say about him? He'll do, like, what he would do, be like, I don't, you know, I'm tired. He'll do like a little kid walking around the mall, and he'll be like, I don't want to eat there. David takes us to shitty places. Because like, it's usually opening for Spade.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll just be walking down. I don't want to go there. You always take us to shitty places. Just whining and acting
innocence to it, too, with being that like a big of a teddy bear. That just like the contrast. Is
jumping up and down on the bed in the hotel room going, Todd, look at me. He goes, look at me. I'm a full grown adult. He's jumping up and down on the bed. And of course, you know, I smoke. And that's funny if you're not high. But when you're high, it's like high candy. Him jumping up and down on the bed. Wow. Todd, look at me. I'm having fun. I should have fun. I'm supposed to. You know, just being like silly.
What do you? What's your favorite thing to do with your comedy buddies that is like non-comedy? Like, and who do you spend a lot of time with that are comics?
You know, ever since Rory Scovel hit it big, he hasn't really been calling me.
Rory,
another comic which you give a lovely shout out to in your special.
I do give a little fuck Rory Scovel.
The whole crowd chants it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's amazing.
I hang out, you know, even if you don't see it, but actually Rory is someone, you know, that we hang out a lot. You know, sometimes it's like I do the podcast. So John Bram Wagner is a newer comic, but he also does the board on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So just by nature of like we're around each other and we hang out a lot. I hang out with John a lot, or like before that, Jake Adams did it. And so, but like, you know how it is, like, you know, a lot of people, but you don't like, I'll go to the improv.
Yeah.
And there's so many people like I do know really well, but you don't know their names.
Yeah.
Everybody's names. Mm-hmm. So but a lot of times I know I can just go to the improv. Like that's pretty much where if I'm not home, I go to the improv. But if I'm home, I just like hanging around the fire pit. I have a fire pit in my backyard.
Wow. I want one so bad. Brad just got one.
Yeah. It's great.
It's the best. There was I had a party at my place and just it was six comics just all around the fire pit and just making each other laugh.
It is. It's so tranquil and tribal.
Yeah.
Just the fire and just, so that's pretty much what I do. I love smoking. I'm a pot smoker. Majority of the time, maybe 10 times a year I'll smoke during the day, but when the day is over type of a pot smoker.
Yeah, me too.
And then
you like to veg out, or you like to be like stimulated somehow?
Well, like both.
Yeah, right. There's sometimes where I'm like, I just want to be comatose and watch something so mindless, but like also be stimulated like by some Planet Earth shit or some really fucked up Oprah documentary, or both, you know, play the audio from the Oprah documentary while watching a Planet Earth special. Sometimes really get you hard.
Now I know what I'm doing tonight.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes I'm just like, I want to get a little high and go out and like, maybe it's a Dave and Buster's and play some games, or maybe it's like a house party. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like
there's definitely different things you could do with it. And it's funny you say at the chill out part of it, you like, I don't know how this started, but I was like, had some people over my house and I got two, I had an edible and it was too much for me.
And it was your place and you were hosting?
Was it my, well, there's only about, at that point, like 8 or 9 people.
Or did you end up finding you were actually at a coffee bean and you were just telling all the people there, like, sorry, my place is a mess. And they're like, this guy's fucked up.
This isn't your place. There was just a small get together of like 8 people and everyone there knew. Like so I said, I'm going to my room, but I'm not going to bed. I'm just too hot. And I said it, and then I had to get right into bed. I sat up in my bed, and I go, well, I feel pretty good now. Like, I'm not ready to call it a night, but I can't go out there.
So you had to hit the reset button.
So, yeah, but I go, what a great way. So I said, well, I have a chair in my room. I go, someone come in and smoke pot with me and sit in this chair. So then...
That's home court advantage.
They did. Somebody came in, they sat in the chair, and then I was like, you know, we were doing bits and stuff, and I go, you know what? This would be a fun night. Like, we all do it for someone else. We go over to someone's house. They get to lay in bed. If they want a drink, we get them a drink. But like, you invite two or three people over. Yeah. You squeeze three chairs in your bedroom. You get to lay in bed. If you want a drink, they get you a drink. If they get pizza, they give you pizza. And then you do it for someone else.
It's like you're hanging out with your old sick grandma.
Well, that's where, when I was in the hospital, I went, you know, the fun thing about being in the hospital is like everyone comes around and they're, you know.
And you're just in bed and you don't have to get up. And
not if you're
there.
Really sick, by the way. Right, isn't that paranoid? I'm so paranoid, one person will go, you didn't have stage. No, I get it. That's a different story. Yeah, but you're in there and you know you're going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. I love that you kind of went there because, I mean, one of my first exposures of something that you did was Todd's Coma, which was basically a talk show with you in a coma. That was like early in the career, but it was just so...
There's some
inventive.
Of it online.
On YouTube.
Yeah, there were two versions. One, you ever think when you tell stories, and you know, you think I'd be doing this as long as I am, that I would know, like, okay, can I, is there any purpose of me telling what I'm about to tell? I'll do the edited version. Okay. So there were two versions of Todd's Coma. One, we had the idea, because I came home from an audition. I don't like acting. I'm very bad at it. I'm not good at the audition process.
I disagree. Well, the audition process, maybe, because
the audition process.
There, but then nobody is great at it. It's
some people are much better.
Sure.
And I'm not good at blocking. So someone told me this story, and it says, I think, a lot to do with why I'm bad at acting, even when you can ad-lib all your lines, like Curb style. Sure, you know, you're trying to get him out of your house, however you do it. He's drunk. You want him out. Boom. Even that, with blocking, I could handle maybe, but still not. But I'm so nervous and sweating. And so someone told me this story when I told them that. They go, you know what? I'm only telling you this because I think you could handle it. They go, but when you came in, we had already picked... We had already picked the person. And then we thought, wait, did we see... This is the person telling me. Did we see Todd? We should see maybe Todd Glass for that. I came in. He goes... And he's telling me this. And he goes... This is when Louis C.K. had the second show.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Right? So... And he's telling me this. And he goes, you came in... By the way, I wouldn't tell this story if I had it because it's braggadocious. But it's not so braggadocious. I didn't get it. So
it's
he
not
goes,
like I have a friend who owns a Dairy Queen braggadocious.
Megan Howard, who I finally admitted I took a little money over the years. She saw it on Showtime. I told Steve, leave it in. She called me. She goes, I can't believe it. I go, I know what you did too. Let's keep it. How often did you clean the... I told her, I go, Meg, how often were we supposed to clean the machines? Okay.
By the way, Dairy Queen Secrets is a documentary or just crime show. Some sort of like, that needs to happen. Like,
absolutely.
We were pretty good. Actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I was crazy clean then too, but we didn't clean the machines every night. We did every other. But anyway.
So Louis tells you.
So he says, when you came in for that, you auditioned. He goes, and you sat the first time in. And as soon as he said it, I went, I know I did. Because I looked for any reason to sit. Because my dyslexia, there's too many things if I'm walking. So the joke I had was like, they'll go, okay, you're a cop. You're chasing someone down the street in an audition. I go, okay, I'll sit over here. You know, sometimes it's in the gray area where you can sit. Not with that. And I did. I sat for the first scene. And he goes, you left the room. And we went, everybody went, he's the guy, right? He goes, and then... Chris Albrecht, I think at the time, I think that was his name, was the president of HBO. And by the way, genuinely, I have no, it's so many years past, I'm not destitute, so it's easy to point out that I was impressed that he knew. Somehow, he knew. He goes, have him come back. And he goes, yeah, and they had me walk around. He goes, oh, yeah. I go, yeah, I remember that. And I was fucked.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't do too good.
Why? Because it just... Because
walking and then...
Did you try to sit down? They go, no, stand
for
this one?
No, they were like, they gave me something else. Hey, just stand for this one.
Rub your head and pat your stomach. To close the scene. If you do that, the job's yours.
And then they block... You know how they... So because... I realized that on a thing like when I had one line. I thought I could do this one line.
Yeah.
It's one line. And then I'm not complaining, by the way. I mean, this is your job as an actor.
Yeah.
But then they come over and they go, All right, you know, usually you would stand that close, but you know what? Because we're cheating from over here, just cheat the difference 2 feet. Okay, right away. I'm like, oh, fuck. That's one. Look, no, okay. And then if they give me a second direction, like, I know. Okay, that's, they said that in passing. They don't think I'm over there battling, dealing with that. You know, they just go, okay, and cheat it a little. Stay 2 feet back. I know normally in real life you'd be close. Stay 2 feet back. Okay, they don't know I'm over there going, okay, okay. Then casually a minute later he goes, when he starts talking, of course, you know, just leave like 3 seconds. And then I'm like, oh, fuck.
That's
I'm sweating. I sweat. I'm horrible. Oh, all I do is think, I'm going to get out of here soon, hopefully, and just go home. And I hate it. I hate it. I have liked maybe one or two things that I've... My own pilot, I did. Mm-hmm. Mr. Show was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because it was literally just... No, not a lot of direction.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, any direction was relevant, important, and very pretty quick.
Yeah.
That was fun. And Tosh.0, they like literally... They just feed me my line. They just feed me one line.
It seems very loose.
Yeah, they just feed me lines, and then I repeat them, and that I can handle.
You did some stuff on Sarah's show or no?
Yeah, and I hated it.
Really?
Not hated the because they because again
not Sarah. Sarah's your pal.
Of course,
I don't want to start a rumor.
But the nervous, and then and maybe there sometimes only if it was important they would you'd be saying a word wrong, but they would go normally it wouldn't fucking matter because she says this word late, and then you're like, oh shit,
yeah.
But I would just sweat. Any of my friends, matter of fact, a few months ago, a friend of mine asked to do something. I said I should just tell you now. It's hard for me to act. I tell them right now, I don't want to slow up the production. That way, if they say they want me, well, then you ask for it.
Yes. Well, you always have stand-up, and that's the thing.
I have stand-up, thank God.
That's the
love.
Thing that you do so well. And the fact that you can be so silly in your special Act Happy, which is now streaming on Netflix, the fact that you can be so silly... But then,
is he about to spit take?
Brad, that was a very close spit take.
Yeah.
You know when you go, you got to either calm down and get it and swallow it, or just, I was a dribble, almost dribble back into the glass. You know when you can't
love
do
it.
A spit take, but you have to just spit it out?
Yep. But the fact that you do a bit in the recent special, like the coming out of the closet during a heart attack. What the? Dude,
you know why that worked for me? Because
you're always like absurd and sort of abstract and sort of this is a look into my life, but not too much.
Well, I didn't want to make it like
that was in your head.
I appreciate you saying that, and it sort of happened accidentally that I didn't, you know. With stand-up comedians that have come out in the past, that's what their whole special has been about. And I'm not just trying to be, I really do say this from a place of empathy. It was all about, I'm gay. And it had to be. It was new. It was like, you know, you couldn't just drop that on an audience and then recover. Like you mentioned, you can't just, so, you know, but now times are changing. So when I say this, I don't do it as spitting on the first, if anybody had a special and that's all they dealt with, you know. But there's time like in sketch, I thought. Like in sketch, 30 years ago in sketch, if one person was white and the other person was black, that's what the sketch had to be about.
Right. Sure.
My parents are coming over. You're white. I'm black.
Yeah. How do we handle this?
Yeah, you couldn't just have a white person and a black, but you couldn't because it would be like, are they going to acknowledge that?
Yeah, it's going to be
like, what's the dog going to say?
Yeah. It's going to be like a Chevy Chase, Richard Pryor scene where it's like you have to do something
about
it.
You have to do something. And then eventually somebody says, you know what? Some people are going to be like, and you know there's some people that sat at home probably and think they're pretty open-minded and went, are they really just going to act like that's the norm? Somebody has to, or we'll just for the... So I felt the same thing like with if we're going to bring, you know, stand-up specials in the 21st century, someone is going to have a sketch. Mm-hmm. I mean, a stand-up routine. I'm sorry. Let me take a deep breath here. So back to sketch. In sketch, if there's two guys or two women, I don't think... I'm sure somebody's done it, but I don't know if SNL does it, where it could be two guys, but it has nothing to do with them being gay. It's just two guys. They live together. The bit has nothing to do with that. It has to do with how a tree fell through their window and their neighbor, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't think they do that yet. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, we got to bring stand-up specials in the 21st century. So how do I do it? But it doesn't go, okay, here it is.
Right.
And I thought, if it's in the middle, it sort of came in the middle of my heart attack story. So I'm in the middle of my heart attack story. I share that. And then it doesn't have to be ta-da or wrap it up. And I just, when I'm done, I go, okay, anyway, back to the heart attack story. Like, that's it. It does, because I think for me it said it didn't have to become my identity.
Right.
Should it be something I talk about? Of course, it's of course. Part of my life. But yeah. it's not my identity. And I think you should talk about the most interesting thing about yourself. And if it's your sexual, if it's not an interesting story about...
Right.
But no, just I have to be very clean with this, because when you're giving opinions on podcasts or radio, I'm blaming myself. You got to be very careful that you don't indirectly insult someone that does. Are you saying that's bad? And I'm not.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But... if it, it wasn't the most interesting thing about me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I thought, how do I like, you know, and then I thought that's what it is. I'll talk about it and then boom, right back to the act. And it didn't become my identity. And I think for a lot of maybe older and too, but I always say younger people, I know my fear was that it would become my identity, even outside of stand up, that's right. all people would talk about behind my back.
Oh, really?
And I think when a younger person, I know because of some emails I got, I think it calms them to go, especially if you're younger and you want to do a stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. And you see, oh, this guy, it wasn't his identity.
Right. He's just a funny guy.
Yeah,
and then
he talked about
sudden...
that and he moved on.
Yeah.
So you know, I was happy the way that it came out. I appreciate you.
Yeah, because that bit, like, it's so...
I'm sweating.
Like, it just, like I said, you tend to go towards the absurd, and that to me was the most personal bit you've ever done. And it was refreshing, and it was brilliant, and it was funny.
Thank you.
So
how much crafting went into it? Like, how much did you just kind of speak? Like, how many times did you do it on stage, or
you know,
think through it, write it out, or do you just kind of go, you know what, this is going to be the most pure if I just do it a few times and then speak from the heart?
It was like, I didn't want to just have jokes like... You know, like the stereotypical, you know, jokes that were made, you know, mm-hmm. My parents knew when I was younger because...
Right.
So, I mean, I wrote a book about 5 years ago, and that sort of talked about it in there. And then I thought, and then after I came out on Marc Maron, I would go back to comedy clubs and I thought, well, you have to say something. Yeah. But I didn't at first. So sometimes towards the end, I would go, oh, by the way, and I would make like a quick joke. I go, all my comedian friends are like, when are you going to talk about it? In a good way.
Yeah.
When are you going to talk about it? So I tell the audience, I go, so I talked about it. Okay. Now can we move on? Because I had to say something, you know, for the people that maybe is. And by the way, they might go, oh, maybe I'll talk about this. So, and then eventually I did. I did talk about it. I went to Amsterdam and I was with my friend, and he's another comedian. And he goes, you, Daniel Keno, he probably begged me to mention his name.
Yeah.
He goes, he really motivated me to talk about it, and it was everything. It was, I got off stage and it was like, oh my fucking God, I can't believe I did that.
In a good way.
Yes.
Cathartic?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Like,
because I can't
more
imagine.
More overwhelming than I thought it would be after how many years I'd done stand up.
Jeez.
And I felt I was in a safe zone because it's Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
But because, like, I can't imagine going on stage and, like, because we all talk about what's going on in our lives. If there was something that you could never say on stage your whole time, and then finally you go on stage in Amsterdam and you're like, okay, now I'm going to talk about this.
Yeah.
If Brad couldn't talk about being a little person, I couldn't talk about my parents fucking through the sheets to make me. What would we do? But you're right. It is. It is a, like, I mean,
like, what if I was in a, like, what if I was in a tall suit and I was actually a dwarf inside the tall suit, and the whole time I couldn't talk about my situation where it's really hard to buy clothes. I could not do that. I just had to pretend that I had to do everything just as normal. It would blow my mind, and it would be so cathartic the first time I'd be able to go on.
How much did you talk about it the first time?
You know, not that you get used to the lie, and then you think, hey, by the way, there's people with other lies too. Sure. You don't. That's what you know. Everyone has some are harder than others.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it. Some are harder than others. But I talked about it. You know, I don't even think I did the heart attack story then. So I had to out of nowhere just go. And I remember it was so bad. And Daniel goes, Todd, they don't know if you're kidding or not. Mm-hmm. So I figured out a way to make him believe me, which is unimportant now. But I delivered it in a way that
that's
he goes,
a tricky balance too, right? Because you want to be very honest and candid about it. But you're also like, this is, I want to find the comedic value in this because I'm doing a comedy show. But like,
I did have some jokes. I had a joke about, and when I thought, like, their jokes, you know what I thought? It sounds weird. I didn't want stereotypical formulaic jokes. When I started to have a few jokes about it, I go, they're jokes like Rory Scovel would tell if he was. You know what I mean? I thought, okay, that's what. And one of them was, number one, that I would lie. It was an impersonation of a guy who never saw
pussy. But he said he did, and he really didn't know what it was like. So I go, this is impersonation, and I go, loosely based on me. That's how I did it the first night. And then and they go, what? Oh, you've never seen it, you know? And I'm like, yeah. Yes, I have. They go, what's it like? I go, it's like, it's somebody like had like six marshmallows, and then they cut hair over it, and then you fucked it. That was, I know, it's so absurdly stupid. That I didn't do too many nights. The other one was, which was true, and it sort of goes back to what Brad just said about like, you know, luckily I could talk about a guy that I was in a relationship with.
Sure.
And it's all the same. That's what I say in the special. I go, it really is all the same, because people in the audience, look, I'm not being negative, but I would imagine there were people in the audience that either think they still believe they can pray the gay away, or at least they're okay with people being gay, but they don't believe in gay marriage. You know?
Sure.
So, but I was telling these jokes every night about a guy, but saying it's a girl. And there were people in the audience, some of that type, that were going, it's so true. It's just like us. It's exactly like us.
Not,
years later,
not even
to go,
knowing.
That's how much it is the same.
Yeah.
Is that, if that's not an experiment to go, thousands and thousands of people that were sitting in the audience with a woman going, oh, his jokes, his life
is. That's what you do, honey.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, that's how much it is the same. That's why I really do try to get people to go, stop saying women do this and men do this, because it's not true. Everything, it's relationships. It's like guys do pretty much everybody does the same shit. You're just not dating a guy. So you think guys are more chill until you love one, and he could hurt you more if he forgets your birthday or something, you know? So I always go, I'll have this conversation with you, but it's more about human beings.
Right.
You know, the thing with women is, the thing with men, it's not as ironclad as you think it is sometimes. Because because you know what? If there was a weaker sex, more annoying sex, let's just say.
Okay.
Let's say it was true that men were this or men were that. Well, then in gay relationships, you could see someone going, let's say two women. Hey, how's it with two women? You go, well, it's like every relationship, there's problems, but nowhere near the amount with a guy and a girl.
Yeah.
No, they have exactly the same amount.
Right.
So it's not one sex, or same sex relationships would be notoriously better. They're not. You have the same problems you have. Anyway, I'm done.
When your friends were encouraging you to talk about it on stage, were people pitching you bit, like with Sarah coming to you with bits, or would you guys talk about it in great length to kind of just find, like, or was it somebody you really wanted to explore, like,
Sarah would, I think was the one who gave me the idea, which what the book ended up being called, because I would go, my friends are coming.
Sarah Silverman, by the way, not Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Another famous Sarah.
The reason it got interrupted with the heart attack story, I was able to do it because the night I had a heart attack, Sarah was there. I should probably fill people in.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She was there. It was her show. And then she would have Sarah Silverman and friends, and everyone was hanging out. And I thought I'd smoked a little too much pot and was having, I guess what I've learned was called a panic attack, which it's fun when you find out, oh, that's a panic attack what I've been having? And you're like, no, I'm not panic attacks. I'm nervous, and I thought I was going to die. My heart was beating. Todd, that's a panic. So I learned that's what it was called. And it was after the show, and I just realized your computer isn't backwards. And I was getting into they were putting me in the ambulance after the show. Finally, they called paramedics, and they were putting me in the ambulance. And, you know, knowing you're being pathetic while you're being pathetic is what a treat. but I yelled out to her, you know, and I yelled out, Sarah, call my girlfriend. Because she knew at that time about me. Said, call my girlfriend. I was like, you know, wanted her to call Chris.
Yeah.
So she did. And then she was like, we were talking about this. Do his parents know? I go, no, they don't know about our situation. She goes, is that what you call it, a situation?
Yeah.
She goes, that's some situation you got yourself into. So it's like funny to call it a situation, you know?
Right.
So I think I'm pretty sure that is why. And ended up, we called the book, The Todd Glass Situation.
Yes.
What I wanted to call it, and I'm still, you know, they might know more than me because it could come off sexist. I didn't realize that till literally a year ago when I told someone what I want to originally call the book. Mm-hmm. I wanted to call it, and I'm okay.
I was going to preface something, but I'm not like, sorry, I'm talking. So I'm like very chatty. I had a half of a 3-hour energy and a little bit of pot. Jesus Christ. What a great combination.
It really is a great combo. I've done it before.
It is.
Yeah.
I love it. I love being up and high.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know why 5-hour energy isn't being like, 5-hour, like do those little commercials, like feeling a little sluggish at work, blah, blah, blah. Do all that. Get all that out of the way. Then be like, take a 5-hour energy. Then have somebody just pop in the corner. Maybe it's Brad being like, and a little bit of hit of weed. And then just like pop out, you know, and just mention it real quick.
When they talk about, because they talk about what to mix it with to make a cocktail, you're like, or drugs.
Yes.
Or legal recreational drugs.
Because people said, like, you know, I get it. I get it that you have to be careful about your health. But here's the way I looked at it. I could be just being lazy to be able to do my little, what I love, a half of a 5-hour energy, and I'll smoke some pot. It's my favorite thing to do. My sister-in-law goes, you know, that's bad for you. Now, look, I get it, what she's saying. You're dealing with an upper and a downer.
Right.
But I said, let me ask you this, tell me.
Two naturals, though, right?
I can't imagine. I might be wrong, but someone going, did you hear... I'm not saying it's good for you. Look, a lot of things aren't good for you, but it is even dabbling into the could kill you category. And if the answer is yes, then say yeah. But here's the question. Does this sound normal? Todd, you hear about Todd. He died last night. You go, what the fuck happened? You go, well, he was doing, and no one knew it. He was doing, I think some of his closer friends knew he did it, but no one really. He would do a half of a 5-hour energy and smoke pot. People's face are going to go numb. That's how he does. They get it if they said he had four Red Bulls and he has it.
But, and cocaine, but it's like, oh.
He had a little bit of coke and but so
he put a Big Mac and put it inside of a Domino's pizza and put hot fudge on top, that stone motherfucker. And then people would be like, well, at least he went out. Like, that's a delicious fucking last meal.
Wow, what is that again?
Yeah.
Pizza?
The Big Mac in the pizza, and wrap it up, hot fudge on top.
You cut it like a
Stromboli. I was a former fat kid. So former fat kids make the best potheads because like your brain is already working overtime.
They have ideas.
As far as like, yeah, dude, because you don't just see one meal as like that's the final meal. I'd see mac and cheese and be like, well, what could go in that?
Oh, of course. Doctoring coming
home. We're not done yet.
Yes. I'd come home with a roasted chicken and mac and cheese and then, you know, I'd take anything.
Yeah, brisket mac and cheese. There's a reason why people aren't selling this.
So anyway, I yelled out and that's how that all came to. And then, the other joke was, I would always say on stage, so I don't always do it now, but I will be honest. I went from being petrified to talk about it to sometimes almost liking to do it in the sense that even if there's 50 people in the audience that think they know, you know, like, oh, I can tell who's gay. I can tell who's not gay. Yeah. And even though I talk about a lot of, design and atmosphere, most people, it's more tone that they think they can tell.
Sure.
So I do it because if there's a kid in the audience, that's when I don't want to do it. Sometimes I really enjoy it if I don't have a new joke. Like now I have a few new jokes, so I actually enjoy talking about it. Yeah. But for a while I didn't, and I just didn't talk about it. But I thought, you know what, do it. Because if there's a kid in the audience and he hears it, you do an hour set, and literally for 3 minutes you talk about it. He leaves there feeling like, oh, cool. Like, because my mom had this friend, his name was Jim Connett, and he was just a cool dude.
Yeah.
And we all loved him. And then when I found out, like when I was like 14, he was gay, or 15, I was like, oh, Jim's cool.
Yeah.
You know, so he's just a cool guy. So I could be like that. Like I relate with him.
Yeah.
And if for anybody in the audience.
You want to have the full spectrum of examples. Sure. You want to have RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
Yes.
But then you also want to have Todd Glass, you know, which just like...
I'm glad you said that because that's very intuitive. What I don't want to make it sound like I'm saying, and you said it before me, which is great. Anybody should be comfortable in their own skin. If you want to put on a dress or whatever you want to do in life and you find your true self, you're a winner. I don't want anyone thinking even Todd doesn't like it.
No.
If you manage to be who you are, whatever it is. So for me, I couldn't find any relatable people. You know, I was like, I don't relate with that. I used to think, am I going to become that? Like, is that?
Wow. What a scary thought. Or like not necessarily scary, but just interesting. Where you go, that's not who I am, but is that who I become?
Right. I know you're doing exactly what I'm doing. You don't want to is good. We're doing it. We don't want to say scary, meaning it's a wrong or a right thing. But it's not what I felt like.
Sure.
So Jim Connett, and for me, it was Jim Connett, and then you know. So then I figure if I do it in my act, and there's either a person there that thinks they know what you know, whatever. But if there's a kid, maybe he'll go, oh, that's cool, you know, and just sort of leave the club and a little bonus that, that's why some nights I'll go do it, you know?
Have you gotten some emails like that?
I have. Let me tell you something.
That's got to feel good.
You know,
What do you always, if people are afraid, most of the time, afraid to be maudlin? Is that the word? You know, like.
I wish I was intelligent enough to know what maudlin was.
I don't know either. Maybe I just, my uncle said, you'll never look dumb if you don't use a word you don't know what it is. And I do this. Thanks a lot. My uncle's like, wasn't I fucking, he was in radio. He goes, you'll never look dumb if you don't try to know, you just ask questions. But maudlin, whatever. So.
I think it's. I do get emails. With a photographer.
I do get emails like it, and it is. And it is. It's. It's very powerful, and it reminds you that, you know, because sometimes we can forget that it's, we just think it's an issue.
Yeah, sure.
But you forget, no, there's people behind these issues. Yeah, we're not just arguing to argue.
Right. Yeah. It's always like you're just arguing logistics of certain things, and you realize, oh, no, there's human beings behind this.
Yes, there's a kid that's like sitting there, and then you're talking about this, and then you're crushing his soul, you know?
Yeah.
So the emails are, they remind you, like, good you did it.
Yeah.
And it helps you too. And it reminds you also what's still out there. You know, like,
sure,
things are better than they used to be for everything.
Sure.
But we live in a circle where we could think it's the norm. So I love when someone goes, hey, when you're in high school now, they don't even care if you're this or that. It's a shit ton better than it was 30 years ago. But when you get emails, you go, don't forget to have empathy. It's still a big deal.
Sure.
Kids growing up hearing their parents say things and hearing kids in high school say things.
Absolutely.
So it still exists. And that's what those emails remind you. You
know? I would love to be a fly on the wall. You and Sarah are two of my favorite people to listen to on podcasts because you guys, I mean, and you're just, I mean, you know, proving it tenfold right now. Like, you have so many great opinions about so many different things and can talk about things for hours. And do you have people like that in your life that you like to just, like do you ever just need to, like, get a, I don't know, whether it's politically charged or some sort of a charged conversation with somebody and you're like, all right, I'm going to call, whether it might be Sarah or somebody in your life where you go, like, I need... You know, I've had too normal of a week, or I'm not, or I see something on the news, or I just, something happened, and like, you want to call your friend.
Yes, I call, sometimes my, he's not even a comedian, my friend Eric Olson, he like produces things, and then Caleb Sion sometimes, because he has a great way to, he lived with a lot of the people that I'm trying to figure out, what are they thinking now, or what's going on, like, I want to know the opposing view. Caleb Sion is always great. He goes, yeah, I just saw those people for Thanksgiving, like, so, and
where you can have like mindless talk about and riff and joke and then get into like serious shit, right? Like, you need somebody like that in your life.
That's my favorite type of person that you can be tremendously silly with and then also get real deep with.
Yeah.
And all within the span of, you know, there's no just one night. You're just whatever. Sometimes you sideways, you're having a silly conversation. Then all of a sudden you're having a deep conversation. Yeah. I like people that can go all over the spectrum. I also like people that. I really do like people that throw out. I don't like to be with people that just roast you,
right?
But there's no love. Like, you know, I love you. No, I don't. No, I don't.
You've just been insulting me for the last 10
every
minutes.
Time you see me, you go into this thing. Now, if somebody throws a lot of love my way, then you could.
You can make all the late circumcision jokes you want.
Yeah,
you
could.
I was 22. I didn't know you were supposed to get it as a kid. No, I'm joking. It happened way earlier. I'm fine, ladies.
I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I love comedians. I love festivals. I can't. When I get to a festival and I'm hanging out at a party, you know what I think the minute I walk in? I go, oh, it's gonna have to end.
Yeah,
I'm so excited.
You get like pre sad. So
cool. Yes, because I don't want it to end. That's why you're up till 6 a.m. hanging out by the elevator.
Well, there's that.
You're there a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been there. That's the best. Like when you're. Either just, coming back in and people are leaving the bar at like 6 a.m. or you're walking out to get food or something. Like, yeah, that is just...
You go, oh, there are still people that are up.
Yeah, and that's the best too if you can meet up at that time and be like, I think we're the only ones up right now. Well, now what do?
It's beautiful.
We go find the next thing.
We would find congregating near the elevator, and we did this thing called elevator theater where the doors would shut. You started to know once you press your floor, you started to figure out how long it took the elevator doors to shut. You got good at it. So you go, you do your joke and your hand's over there. And so James Adomian was in the elevator. He does an impersonation of Andy Kindler. He goes, and that's another thing. And then the door shuts. So we're laughing so hard. We're like that. So I get in the elevator. I'm like, I want to do it. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. The door shuts. About 15, 20 minutes goes by, maybe five the first time. James, the doors open up, and it's James. And another thing! Da-da-da-da! The door shuts. We're like, is he going to come down again?
Oh,
we're like getting giddy, but a half an hour passed. He never came down again. And then 45 minutes later, he fucking
doesn't. After we laugh, we go, you had to be in bed. He goes, I had already gotten in bed. I thought, what if they're still down there? How cool it would be
to do one more
So he
time.
Goes, I got in the elevator, came back down. We're like, this is too good to be true.
Dude, that's unbelievable.
You get to be, did you ever see like, I think it's maybe, you don't even have your license yet, but you can go to the mall with your friends and there's like a group of, they're just having the best time of their lives. They're kids and they're out and they're old enough to, you know, buy stuff and have a little bit of money. Yeah. Maybe they have their license. I think it's the age I'm thinking of. They don't even maybe have their license yet. But they're having 14, so 15. Much fun and they're doing bits basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Comedians are like, we get to do that forever.
As adults, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have to say, and by the way, I'm not saying it in a mean way, I'm saying it to have appreciation. We don't have to, a lot of our great stories, even though we have great stories from 20 years ago or 30, depending how long your business, there's also just as many great stories from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that's what I love, that I don't have to have every story about being, oh, fuck, remember that? Some of it's like last year, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I cherish that.
It really, I mean, you think about people who aren't comedians, like friends of ours that work like 9 to 5s that are like, they, I mean, look, they have their own version of doing bits.
Mm-hmm.
Not funny. But you get late. I'm glad that it. You get to try to flex that muscle and like have fun.
Some of them don't even miss it, so it's not sad. Like, hey,
I'm not saying I respect it. You try to be happy with your friends, but it's just
none of us are insinuating that you, if you're not a stand-up comedian, you don't have a ball. Of course. But even people that have that sense of humor, everyone that's listening, they if they do what we do, they know what we're talking about, and they listen. Mm-hmm. They know exactly what we're talking about. And my friend said something interesting about, because he has that sense of humor. He's not a comedian, but he has that sense of humor. He was, it doesn't matter. He was like, he was in the business end of it.
Sure.
But and he goes, the weirdest thing about leaving it was going to a regular job, and not the regular job, because my new job was fine. I was okay. He goes, but the sense of humor.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I necessarily wasn't around stand-up comedians anymore. How do I find these people at work? I know they're here.
Right. They got to be like closeted.
Yeah, they can't kind of be. Yeah, they can't make. Yeah. Where do you find the person that you can make a 9/11 joke with, right away, and know that they also can have a heart-filled conversation about the truth of what they just witnessed. Exactly. Have an honest conversation from overly, introspective and what the fuck just happened and life, and then make this silly twisted joke and then back to the serious. He goes, finding that is fun. Fucking hard.
Yeah, it is.
But he has. Him and his wife have. That was 10 years ago. That's now they're amazing. Like, yeah, we know,
Well, and we all know why you're actually here, Todd Glass. You are actually here to accept the 2018 Comedian of the Week, Comedian of the Year
Award.
Comedian of the Week Award. Yes. If only I could say it and get it out. That would joke would have fucking worked.
Trying to close the podcast.
God damn it.
But to answer your question, my sense of humor is from my mother.
It is?
Remember an hour ago?
And that's why he's the Comedian of the Year. Yeah. Todd Glass, everybody.
Dude, this was so fun. You got to come back
quick.
Sooner. Yeah, it does.
How long did we do?
About an hour 20.
Wow.
Flew by, right?
Yeah, I even talked about some stuff I don't normally talk about. So
I love
that's
that.
Good. I'm always,
it's, you're also like just so generous to talk about everything, but there's, I know there's things you've probably rehashed on your show and other shows. But,
well, you know what? No,
I'm
it's,
glad and we, I'm, I think we,
it's healthy.
We, yeah.
It's good.
The heart attack thing, though, you've talked about that so much.
You know, I don't always, because I'm vain. Isn't that weird why I don't talk about it?
Yeah.
Just because I'm vain. Because I don't want to admit I had a heart attack. You know, because I thought you had a heart attack, you're like, 90, know?
Mm-hmm.
So when I had it, I'm like, urgh. But, it comes up. I don't, but then when I do, it's...
Well, now you and Kevin Smith have something to talk about.
Right.
can I just ask, what are the big changes that you made from that?
It's
that's a big question.
I smoked about a pack and a half of cigarettes a month. Mm-hmm. Maybe two packs max. I say that because I get some friends. They go, you smoke more than that. All right, what do you want from me?
By the way, wouldn't it be great if you were just like, well, I was a Jeopardy guy, now I'm a Wheel of Fortune guy.
No depth or anything.
I had to cut out Trebek.
So I don't smoke anymore. I smoke pot, but no cigarettes. I don't smoke at all. I worked out before, so that didn't change because I was always working out. And I quit smoking. I do juice every day, not like a dessert juice, but like kale, carrots, celery, ginger. Because even on my worst day of eating, I can still say I put some good shit in my body.
Yeah.
You know, some feed your cells and give yourself, even on the worst day.
Yeah.
But the thing that I still battle, we can talk about it next time,
is a very bad eating habits. Horrendous. And something interesting my friend said, for anybody who doesn't want to call food an addiction, mm-hmm. he goes, you know what? I won't force you to call it. I get it. Some people don't overgive everything. It takes away from things that need a name. He goes, but my friend Kevin, who's a therapist, goes, how long have you had this? Just call it a bad habit. It can be a bad, you can have an addiction. Certain things are just bad habits. Yeah. I get it. Not everything is an addiction. Yeah. He goes, how long you had the bad habit? As soon as he fucking said it, my face dropped because I knew the answer and I knew that gave me the answer. I went, I wasn't lying. I went, 25 years? Mm-hmm. He goes, yeah, that's a bad habit. You had it for 25 years. I go, does it sound like an addiction? He goes, I don't give a shit what you call it. It's an, you know, but that was a great way to say it. If it's a, so I battle that because so I did a lot right. I quit smoking. That's why I quit smoking, because I thought if you eat bad still and you smoke, people go, oh, he got a second chance at life. He's not doing too much about it. But at least I can say no smoking.
That's a big deal.
I juice every day and I'm on the Lipitor at least. You know, I don't miss it ever.
Well, sure.
But that's all I'm on, Lipitor, nothing else. No blood, nothing. Really? Just Lipitor, and that, my eating, I'm going to work on.
Good, man. Everything in moderation, right?
It's not moderation. I eat, it doesn't end. Late at night, it all starts
late
about.
Late night eating is
tough. The comic lifestyle doesn't help you.
Candy. There's a Vaughn's that I can go to in my neighborhood without hitting a traffic light. I can come in through the back.
I just somehow picture you coming in the back of the Vons. It's like it's like a speakeasy entrance. Like they kind of slide the door open. Like, who
What's
is
the
it?
Password.
Todd Glass. Sweets.
Say Reese's.
The women
pieces.
There, they know me. All the cashiers. Yeah. Like, I'll go in with they're just friends of mine, but they know that I'm trying to be good late at night, so they try to give you a helping hand. And then she goes, no candy? I'm like, keep it down. Usually you're eating one candy as you're paying for another. I'm like, okay, let's not be talking too much.
Yeah, I saw you didn't put deodorant on today, Pam. Let's fucking chill out with the personal attacks. Well, thanks for doing this.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable.
Fun. Good fun.
And you're at Todd Glass for all your socials, yeah?
Yeah, Todd Glass. When do you plug dates?
Dates now.
I'll put a little intro at the front, too, with your dates. Yeah,
well,
but
we
go
just
ahead right
do
now.
It then?
No, do it now.
Yeah. But I think, okay. You know what? I'm going to forget the I'll give them to you. You don't mind doing
it
in the intro?
No, not at all. Do it in the beginning.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, that'll be easier.
And then also the special, of course.
When's this drop?
2 weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks. Okay, cool.
So new Netflix special, Act Happy, currently streaming. So Netflix and chill with Todd Glass.
Yeah.
There is one more thing.
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go for it.
So
what if I was like, no, save it for the next time.
It's on iTunes. Yeah. Long story short, Blake Wexler is a comedian now. He's a professional stand-up comedian, but I met him when he was 16 and he was doing open mic nights in Philadelphia. He had a Conestoga sweatshirt on. He was 16 years old. It was probably about 12 years ago. So he's like, he started stand-up, that and the shirt. We started talking, and then he started doing stand-up and we became friends. So he kept telling me, I've saved every one of your messages, your voicemail messages, I've saved everyone. But people say that sometimes, but then you find, I got a new computer and I lost it.
Yeah.
So he came over like a year ago. He goes, here they are. You know, there was like 55 of them. We think we took five out, for reasons. And but they're the purest form of stand-up to me, because you literally, stand-up's pretty pure.
Yeah.
But just to one person.
Right.
He put them in chronological order. They tell a story of our friendship, not even thinking that whatever. He goes, yeah, pretty much you can just see our friendship grow as by the messages. So it's that we called it 12 years of voicemails from Todd Glass to Blake Wexler. And they're all there. There's one from Blake to me. The only one I saved, because it made me laugh so hard. I thought, how did he know he could say this to me?
How long are the voicemails?
Some are literally 10 seconds. Some are 3 minutes.
This is phenomenal.
One is me going, it's just because, again, it's not, I don't mind saying things that I wouldn't maybe say. You know, you're around friends, so you say them. It's never punching down at a group of people.
Right.
It's just absurd. It's like one is like, it's not that big of a deal, but it's like, this is how short this was. And the beep is what makes it funny, which I'll be honest, we put it in post. There's no beep. But the beep is like the boom boom.
Yeah.
So I'm like, but they're real messages. There's only three on there that I knew we were making it. And I even say it. I go, now I know you're making this CD. I can't be myself. And then I would just complain about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I go, Blake, I cannot believe that Donald Trump won. I go, this is worse than fucking 9/11. Boo! And that was it.
They just go, but they're all, and then they're 3 minutes me sitting in a hotel room high trying to figure out how to say Toblerone. Toblerone.
Don't say it right. Go get the. Go listen to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there you go. So, 12 years of voicemails from Todd Glass to Blake Wexler available on iTunes.
Listen while you're eating a Toblerone.
Thank you. Toblerone.
What a dick. Says it the right way right in front of you.
How did you get it?
In front of your face.
Toblerone.
Right in front of your face.
Face. Go fuck yourself. Toblerone. There you go.
Thanks, Todd.
Bye.
So, that's the show. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamy Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.